You filed a flight plan to Mountain Rescue. If we don't report in, they'll come looking for us.
Now, that's how it's supposed to work, except I put in a flight plan for Borum Caverns, and this isn't Borum Caverns, is it, Juno?
We're in the wrong cave.
Where are we?
It hasn't got a name. It's a new system. No one's ever been down here before.
Let me ask you a question. Would you prefer to stay alive without your mommy and daddy or die with them? That's a tough question, huh?
It was moving. It was alive. It knows we're here. We just have to go. We have to go.
We can't do that.
You didn't see it. I'm not staying here.
If we try to leave, they kill us.
We're being quarantined here. We are being kept here to die.
While you were looking for me, I was looking for you. Well, I got you now.
Was that him in the car?
Yeah, sure it was. Because it walked very far.
Why is that?
Because I cut off his legs.
And I'm going to do the same to you.
Time of reckoning is upon us all.
Hello, welcome once again to Dark Discussions, your place for discussion of horror film, fiction, and all that's fantastic. I am one of your co-hosts from the state of New Hampshire in the U.S. of A., and with me in the state of Michigan.
This is Eric.
Eric, how are you, sir?
I am exhausted, but enthusiastic about this podcast.
Excellent. And in the state of New York?
This is Mike.
Mike, how are you?
I'm fine, Phil. Yourself?
Yeah, doing well. Doing well. And in the state of Massachusetts?
Hey, everyone. This is Abe.
Abe, how are you, man?
I'm pretty good.
Very good. And tonight we have a special guest, actually two special guests that come together because they're married. And they are, why don't you introduce yourselves from the state of Connecticut in the USA?
This is Chrissy Peterson Schoonover.
And that would make me Nathan Schoonover.
Right, right. And first off, Chrissy, why don't you let everybody know who you are and what you do and some of the books that, and I guess the anthologies that you're in. You're an author, right?
Yeah, I'm a writer. I specialize primarily in short fiction. Sorry. Although I do have a novel out called Bad Apple. I'm the author of the book Skeletons in the Swimming Hole, Tales from Haunted Disney World, which is ghost stories set in Disney parks. But mostly I have several short stories out there in several anthologies, among them Great Old Ones Publishing's Canopic Jars. And the new one that's coming out called Bugs is going to have a story in it called Shitty Almonds. And actually there was
best
a short
title ever.
Thank you. And just recently, actually last week, a short story of mine called The Lace in the Window was published in Rose Red Review. So that's available online now for everybody to read. That's a brand new story that's out. So,
and that's Christy, really it. You are actually can be found sometimes at conventions where you bring your books and sign. I know you're going to Anthocom in 2015 next year. Are you going to any others such as maybe Rock and Shock or anything like that?
Well, next year I'm going to do Anthocon and PyCon and possibly ConBust, but I've left my whole slate open because I want to do some different things. I did Rock and Shock a couple of years in a row, and I'm kind of looking around for some different things, possibly even in other parts of the country too, not just in the Northeast. So I'm only committing right now to three, and then I'll see what happens from there.
Very good. And Nate, why don't you let people know who you are besides being Chrissy's husband?
Well, that's the most important of my qualifications.
That's all that counts.
Obviously.
It's, okay, I'm Nathan Schoonover. I am the co-host of the radio broadcast, The Ghost Man and Demon Hunter Show. From the title, people might think that it is a ghost hunting show, but no, it is not. It is a show focused on why people are interested and entertained, afraid, and enthused with all things supernatural, from movies to ghosts stomping around in your house to Bigfoot in your backyard. It's a fun look at the supernatural and crazy world that we live in. And besides that, I also do television spots, and I've done a few specials like Extreme Paranormal, because my co-host Sean Burris is a ghost hunter by trade, and I am an occultist. But we, like I said, we focus on why people enjoy or believe in these things more than actually hunting down ghosts.
Tell them about that.
Well, you don't have to speak in a whisper, honey. They can hear you.
Tell them.
About what?
About Tyrese.
Oh, yes. And this will actually probably air after the show, but take, for example, the guest we're having on this week is Chad Coleman, who plays Tyrese on The Walking Dead. So we will, by the time this airs, folks will be able to go back and check that out at the archives at Ghost Man and Demon Hunter. He's actually going to be on just before The Walking Dead airs. So,
and that is a podcast, right? So they can get it right on iTunes and such?
They can get it on iTunes, and we also broadcast on 102.7 The Hog out of Kansas City and on Action Audio Apps, which is an app for your phone.
Nice.
And I expect lots and lots of questions about The Wire.
I honestly didn't throw a lot of Wire questions in there because I was not as big a huge a fan of The Wire, only because it came out at a time when I was on the road and never got to sit down and watch it. So I had more Walking Dead questions. I will admit I threw a couple CSI Miami and Burn Notice questions in there too. But here's a little thing that people aren't going to know until after this airs, but we actually got Chad to admit he peed himself on the set. So go back and listen.
Now here's where, on the set of The Walking Dead,
yes,
or CSI Miami, or I mean,
on the set of The Walking Dead, yes.
Okay.
Well, I can't hold it against him. I pee myself while we're doing this podcast all the time.
Hey, man, secret to podcasting. I keep a Gatorade bottle next to me, so you're all. Dude, that's the secret. It's
next off, Eric, you do another podcast with a buddy of yours named Dan. Why don't you let everybody know about that?
It's a general interest podcast called The Askancity Podcast. That's Askancity. You can find it on the iTunes Store or at askancity.com.
And Mike, you do a genre blog.
On rare occasions, apparently, yes. Unnaturalselections.com.
Very good. And Abe, you do a genre blog.
Yeah, it is titled A Reeler Movie Reviewer. Reel spelled R-E-E-L-E-R, Movie Reviewer. You can find it on the Facebook page. I usually post my reviews on there. Or you can go to Dr. Scottison's main page, and you'll find it on the right side of the main section.
That's right. www.darkdiscussions.com is the website for this podcast. On the right of the front page is links to everybody's things. And, of course, we have a group on Facebook called Dark Discussions Podcast. And, Abe, since you spoke last, everybody here knows everybody except Abe. Meet Nate. Nate, meet Abe.
Hey, how's it going?
It's great. How are you? Hey, why don't we take the whole show and we'll meet each other right now.
All right. So
you know what? Where do you live? I'll just leave and I'll
like
go drive out.
Long walks on the beach.
Yes.
Abe lives in Lowell, Massachusetts.
Yeah. Sorry, Abe. We're not going to meet up tonight.
It's about a 2-hour drive. Maybe. Depending on how fast you drive. And speaking of Tyrese and The Walking Dead, the new season starts up, season 5, Sunday night, which will be before this episode is released. So everybody who's listening to this now may have already seen episode 1 of season 5. And so that's the big news this week with all the new shows or seasons coming out for genre shows such as American Horror Story and so forth. And then, of course, there was some wrap-up of some of the summer series such as The Strain and Falling Skies and The Leftovers. And I guess we could probably go into the episode because we have a bunch of people to speak and want to give their opinions versus dragging out the intros. So I guess with that, Eric, why don't you let everybody know what we're going to discuss tonight?
All right. Tonight we're going to be discussing the new movie, Annabelle.
John, wake up.
What?
Next door, I heard a scream.
Stay here. Go check it out.
John? Is everything all right?
Oh my God, you're covered in blood.
Go back inside. It's not mine. It's not. Go back inside. Call an ambulance right now. Go!
I like your dog.
You survived. You don't come out the other side of something like this weaker. What is there left to be scared of?
This is the last of them.
How did that get in there? I swear I threw it out.
Things must have got mixed up. There, she fits right in. Come to mommy. Come to mommy.
Is a ghost.
Sometimes demons can attach themselves to objects.
What do I do? Protect your family.
A lot of people will know this based off of the film The Conjuring, because this is almost like a spin-off. Some people may call it a cash-in. Some people may call
prequel.
A prequel. Yeah, they even may say that the best part of The Conjuring was the Annabelle part of that movie. And so the producers said, hey, let's make a movie based specifically on that. And that's the main reason why we got Nate and Christy on, is because they know something about Annabelle. They've actually seen the real Annabelle doll, because even whether you believe in ghosts or demons or whatever or not, there is a story, a nonfiction story, whether it's true or whether it's lies, depending on someone's perspective, the doll does exist. Isn't that right, Nate?
Yes, yes, it does. It is in the Warren Museum, which is a tiny room off of the bottom of Lorraine Warren's home. But yes, the doll exists, and it's like you said, that part of the story is based on truth, which is, when we get into it, I think the real difference between the storytelling between The Conjuring and Annabelle. Maybe the events did or did not actually happen, but, you know, it's, you can definitely tell the difference between someone's storytelling and a written movie.
Now, for folks who don't know what you mean about a museum in Lorraine Warren, who are those folks? Obviously people who are familiar with the Amityville Horror and various other things, like just that fall ghost hunters and such, would probably know. But anybody who saw The Conjuring probably knows too. But for those folks who don't know at all, and they either haven't seen any of these films or they just went and saw Annabelle and don't know the backstory, why don't you and Christy give us a background of the Warrens?
Well, Ed and Lorraine Warren were really pioneers in their field. What would you call them? What do they officially call themselves? Researchers?
They call themselves the New England Paranormal Research Society, so I'd call them Paranormal Researchers.
But they've been doing this work for, God, since the 60s, probably. They go way back. And I first heard of them on that old series In Search Of with Leonard Nimoy. But, you know, they basically, if people were having paranormal issues in their home, unexplained occurrences, things floating through the air, in some cases, objects that were, you know, supposedly had something attached to them, the Warrens would go and do the research and check it out. They also did a number of exorcisms or assisted in a number of exorcisms.
Assisted. They never actually performed
They never actually did one. They assisted in exorcisms. So anyway, they live not too far from Nathan and I. Actually, they live about, what, 30 minutes?
Yeah.
They're actually, well, Ed passed away in 2006, but Lorraine is still living in Monroe, and she's about a half an hour from me. She's actually my friend Chris's next door neighbor.
Yep.
So it's kind of cool because when I go to his house, I can see her house from his backyard.
You can see down that little gully that she lives in.
Yeah.
But
she keeps on asking her to put away the binoculars. But.
Yeah.
Well,
I won't do it.
Not directly. The police she sends ask. But the interesting thing about Ed and Lorraine Warren is the time period that they actually started doing this research and, you know, from their point of view, assisting people. Because everybody has a different point of view on what really goes on. But when I started in this field back in the late 80s, early 90s, you didn't tell people what you did. If you were involved in paranormal research and, you know, psychic research and things like that, you really kept that a secret because you just didn't want your neighbors to know. You didn't want your church to know. You didn't want, you know, you lost friends when they found out. And they were out in the forefront because they didn't keep it a secret what they did. And that's why they became so well known and are so famous for what they did today. And their cases, like you said, involved Amityville. That was the one that really took their name and shot it to the rooftops. And then you have, of course, the Haunting in Connecticut case. And you have the Annabelle case and the werewolf. Was it also Connecticut? The werewolf and The Conjuring. So it's
and there was another case too. About the boy that was possessed by the
right. There was the demon.
That was a different
demonic case here in Connecticut, and they've all had
that was in Brookfield.
Yep,
town next door.
They all had big, like a lot of big coverage because, like I said, when people did this stuff, they kept it quiet, and because Ed and Lorraine wrote books on the subject and paid for their work and research through the books that they wrote. They had to be out there in the forefront. So, you know, they're the ones we know. They're the, you know, they're the people who started this whole thing. It's like people who remember, you know, any sport that got started in the last couple decades. You remember the people who first played in those sports because they were the forefathers of that field.
Yeah, The Conjuring, that one was Rhode Island, right? And then a lot of these you mentioned were in Connecticut. And then there was, of course, the New York. So it's just basically the Northeast, right? Most of the
yes, they were focused on the Northeast. However, from and I do not have access to the records, so I can't confirm or deny. But according to them, they've done, you know, 10,000 cases across the country. So it's or 1,000 cases across the country. So you don't know. How many, not being able to look at the records, I can't tell you for sure, but it definitely does have some experience behind it. But at a certain point, when you're so well known that, and you're so in the forefront of everybody's vision of what's going on, you're the first one that to be called a fraud or a fake or whatever. So it's a tough call. It really is a tough call because I, you know, when I first got started, their names were the first names that always came up. And, like years ago, Ed Warren's nephew, John Zaffis, and I worked together for a while. And he was from the television show Haunted Collector. And when he and I first met, we started throwing out names of different people that we both knew in the field. And we didn't know that we knew the same people because, like I said, you didn't talk about this stuff even with the people you knew. So it's tough to say.
Now, before we, ask you, Nate and Christy, the quote unquote factual story of Annabelle and the doll itself, what it looks like in real life. do any of the other co-hosts have any questions that, or comments you guys want to bring up, Abe, Eric, or Mike?
I think we'll get into it eventually.
Yeah.
I'm anticipating enjoying what Nathan and Christy have to say more than the movie we're going to talk about.
Okay, can we start it off with my saying right off the bat? If one more person walks up to me and says, "Did you see Annabelle? You know it's based on a true story," I'm going to have to scream. It's not a true story, people.
Well, I think it's fair. First of all, let me refer everybody, because we've sort of hashed a lot of this out in the Conjuring episode, as far as our individual feelings about
the Warrens
about that. Right. So about the Warrens. So I, rather than repeat it for our listeners who have been with us, I highly recommend going back and listening to that episode, because I thought that was a really really good episode,
and quite frankly, a much better movie than this one.
Yes, I agree.
And I also think it's fair to say that no matter what side you come out on this, that why we all agree that there is an actual Annabelle doll in an actual glass case in an actual house in New England, whether or not you believe that Annabelle is just a Raggedy Ann doll or something possessed by an evil spirit or an evil demon or whatever it is, I think it's fair to say that whatever the truth is, it is not what is presented in this film.
Yes, exactly. Right.
And therefore, don't go to the film thinking that you're going to learn the truth. Because no matter what the truth is, and we are not going to settle that here tonight, this ain't it. And well, I don't even know that it pretends to be.
And to be fair, if you go to the movies in the theater looking for truth, you're probably not going to find it anywhere, let alone this movie.
Yeah, and I want to also mention, we did an episode that was released two before this one, entitled the Scott Derrickson focused film Deliver Us From Evil, which quote unquote was based on a true story as well. And when we were discussing that and I brought that up, I said that the guy actually exists, the lead detective in the movie. We all poo-pooed and said, well, it really doesn't matter. We want to look at this movie as a movie. And that's it. In other words, is it a good movie or not? What are the good points? What are the bad points? Basically, review it. And since we weren't familiar with that case, the Deliver Us From Evil case that movie is based upon, and though that movie, I believe, was quote-unquote more faithful to the book, I believe Annabelle is not more faithful to the case of the Annabelle doll. However, they made a movie as entertainment purposes, but since we do have two hosts that do know the story very well, the real case study, we can compare and contrast as well as discuss whether this is a good film or a bad film and is a good entertainment or not.
Yeah, and if that kind of nitpicking is going to annoy you, why the hell are you listening to this podcast?
Yeah, right?
But yeah, I mean, it's fun to look at that and see what was real or claimed to be real versus why the hell did they do that in the thing. And I think, Chris, like you pointed out, was it from the Amityville, how it was originally like water that was seeping from the walls that the book turned into blood, and now everyone thinks of blood. So even based on the book, we know the book isn't necessarily the true story. And even if we just recognize that even arguing the true story, people are going to argue if the true story is the true story or not the true story.
Well, so, and here's the thing is that I've never understood the marketing campaign of based on a true story. Because you know what? I took the garbage out on Monday. Doesn't mean people should watch a movie about it.
Well,
and Star Wars wasn't based on a true story, and that seemed to do pretty well at the box office.
Yeah.
Yeah, but just like all sequels, they just keep getting worse as they go along. It's,
Yeah. So, all right. Well, I guess. Well, let's just do since we kind of some people have slipped out what they think of or what they consider this movie is in their opinion, whether it's good or not. Let's go do a roundtable and discuss our opinion of the film first. So, Abe, let's start with you. First off, when did you see the film, and what was the theater audience like? How many people, and rowdy or quiet or whatever? Okay. And your personal opinion of the film itself.
I saw it this week, actually, on Tuesday, because it was discount day. I'm kind of glad it was. Theater size was actually a small crowd, a good maybe 7-8 people, maybe because it was quiet. It was during the quieter hours of the day. No, there wasn't much reaction from any of them throughout the film, and nor from me as well. I found the movie kind of disappointing overall. Definitely not up to the entertainment value of The Conjuring. And it's, to me, it does feel like a cash-in, just to, you know, build off the success of the first film. And there wasn't that many scares, in my opinion. There was one sequence in the middle of it with the staircase and everything like that, where there was plenty of attempts to edit, but also they weren't as frequent as The Conjuring was. And I don't know. I kind of felt it was an unnecessary film, but that's kind of the same feeling I had with the Insidious 2.
Okay, very well. What about you, Mark?
Saw it at the local theater, and it was mostly in a matinee. It was mostly empty. Just a couple of teenagers in it, but it's not much of a reaction. I'll give the film a marginal thumbs up. I wasn't completely bored out of my mind and hating the film. This is a quick, really quick turnaround and, you know, cash-in film. It's barely more than a year since the first film or whatever you want to call it, The Conjuring, came out. And I don't know that Annabelle has necessarily built itself up enough yet as a name cachet to have justified a spinoff at this point, but, you know, they did anyway. The main thing I took away from this is that, you know, we commented somewhat on this in The Conjuring, but the doll here is presented sort of pristine and new, and, you know, when you put it in the right light and put it at the right angle, it's still as creepy as hell, and I can't imagine anybody ever giving this to a child. I just can't. They try to just make it a nicer doll and slowly get it beat up over the course of the film, but no, it just is a creepy,
it's really creepy,
creepy thing. And ironically, they don't really do much with the doll. There were like two or three scenes that I'll give them in the film that got me, that creeped me out a bit. And one of them had to do with the doll.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I mean, I wasn't expecting Child's Play, but it was just the fact that the doll was there. She could have been a rock. You know, it didn't really matter that it was, Annabelle was this creepy doll, you know. So if you're expecting something like, I don't know, like Child's Play or Magic or Trilogy of Terror or Dolls or anything, really, it's Annabelle is just really not a big factor, surprisingly.
Okay.
At least to me.
Fair enough. All right. Yeah, I'll go next. I saw it last night at the very last point I could, almost to the point where I thought I was going to join as a non-participant tonight because I wasn't even sure I was going to be able to get to see the film. But I did. Was able to see it last night, and I dreaded seeing it because it was getting mediocre reviews, and even though The Conjuring is considered a really good film, I probably liked it the least out of everybody here. The last half hour of that film, I couldn't stand. And so I was just expecting something like the last half hour of The Conjuring, though the first part was really good. So I finally decided to see it. I skipped it over David Fincher's Gone Girl first, because that's the film I really wanted to see, and I saw that. But then I did see Annabelle, and since I had such horrible feelings going into the film, I have to say that when I came out, I liked it, actually. It was a film that I probably had beaten down in my mind so much that by the time I saw it, I said, oh, actually, it wasn't as bad as I thought. It was actually pretty good. So I'm probably right where you are, Mike. It appears that you had some issues with the doll being not a factor, and I actually was glad that was the case, because I was even more worried that it was going to be a Chucky or something like that, and I didn't want to see a film like that. So I liked how the doll was, like you said, just a rock almost. It had no effect. It was really things that surrounded the doll that were the issues. But we, you know, we'll get.
I don't know. I wouldn't say I have an issue with it. I just have more of a. I don't know, it's a branding thing. It's if you're going in expecting something, it helps to have the right frame of mind, I think.
Yeah, I guess I see what your point is there. They did market it as if the doll itself was going to do stuff when, in fact, it really wasn't. It was spirits around the doll, and the marketing kind of, I guess, cheated us on that.
Well, wasn't it the doll that was the issue in the Conjuring, yeah, right? Because it's the doll that escapes and supposedly is going to threaten the children of the child of the family, and, you know, and so if then really, if that's the case, then the doll just needs to be sitting in the house, and it's just a threat there. So,
yeah. I don't know. I think that was a dream sequence, but
what in the Conjuring?
In the Conjuring, I think the doll getting out of the case was a dream sequence.
Oh, was that a dream sequence? Okay, that's good. I haven't actually.
Where the little girl is, and then the creepy.
I could sworn that was actually happening in real time. Wasn't it? I could have sworn it was.
Well, it was happening in real time, but it was kind of like a vision that she was having. The doll never really escaped.
Oh,
okay. But it's but see, that was kind of what I was expecting to go with, and I don't mind that they went with something different. But I actually haven't seen The Conjuring since last year, so that's why I'm probably a bit fuzzy on it.
Right. All right. Very well. So that's my opinion. What about you, Eric?
Well, I saw it not opening day, but the Saturday after. Not much of a crowd in my theater because I do that intentionally. I go as early as I can on a Saturday to avoid crowds. And, you know, let me be clear. I've made some comments that indicate I'm not fond of this film. So let me say up front that I've seen many, 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 many movies worse than this one. It wasn't a horrible movie. It's a decent movie. But it's nowhere. I really, really like The Conjuring. It's nowhere near that level of entertainment, in my opinion. I did think that the lead actress in Annabelle, who oddly enough is named Annabelle, was excellent. I thought she did a really good job in this movie. It's kind of slower than I was expecting. I didn't think there was anything really spectacular in this movie aside from one moment towards the end, which really got me. There was one moment in this movie that I thought was spectacular, and the rest of it I was just kind of meh on.
Very well. And now, Nate and Christy, your opinions as a film, but also, I guess, your opinions as how it relates to the factual case. But I guess they purposely basically had this factual case and said, you know what, let's not even bother really following the factual case, and let's just make a quote-unquote really good film, at least in the producer's eyes. So what was your guys' opinion of the film and the audience and such that you saw it with?
I went to this past Sunday, a matinee, a 12:30 show, because I usually don't go to the movies on a Sunday, but I was like, oh, I'll go, you know, because that's the only really, I was so busy this week, that was the only time I had to get there. It was a rather big crowd. They were a noisy crowd. They were very reactive. When the film, before the film, there was trailers, and the Dumb and Dumber trailer came on, and this audience was laughing, and I went, oh God, these people are not very smart, so I don't know what kind of experience this movie's gonna be, with this crowd. But it turned out that they were in an excellent crowd. They were very reactive. They were very into it. They were reacting at things that surprised me. So that was kind of interesting. I felt with this, the story really had some major problems. The story for me had huge holes. There were many things in it that we can get to later. There's at least one or two I'd like to mention a little later. Stuff that just did not make any sense at all. It just totally fell apart just from logic and motivational perspective. But there were some really nice moments. There were a few moments that I really, really was impressed with. I also liked the fact that the doll's activity when these unusual circumstances started happening in this home, that it was a very, very slow build. I enjoyed that because that to me was more like it happens in real life. If you have ever, you know, if you believe in the paranormal, if you feel like you've ever had activity in your home, and I'm sure Nathan can back me up on this, but usually when it starts out, it's not full blown screaming demons and breaking glass. It's usually been going on for a little while, and the stuff might even be so subtle that you don't necessarily notice it. In regard to the doll, I had read reviews before I went, and the reviews that I ended up reading were just horrendous. I mean, they were saying, oh, this film's insulting, it was made for the masses, it's crap, whatever. But none of these reviewers backed up anything they said. They just didn't give me any, they didn't give me any examples of anything, so I was like, okay, well, they're just spouting. And I was pleasantly surprised that I did not find the movie insulting. I found it predictable, but it wasn't insulting. And the fact, the reason I'm bringing this up is that there was one reviewer who was very angry that the doll didn't do anything and said that it was a cop-out and he didn't know why they didn't use more CGI to make the doll move. But I think the doll was creepy without having to move around at all. And I'm going to turn it over now and let Nathan talk about the real Annabelle case. But basically what the way this doll behaved in this film was the way the doll was in the real case. Yeah. It didn't really do that much. It sat in the corner and was creepy. I mean, that's kind of what it did. But go ahead. You can tell him about that.
Well, I saw the movie this morning. And about halfway through the movie, I had decided that if I wasn't doing this interview tonight, I wouldn't finish it. I would have left. I found it, I think Chrissy used the perfect word to describe it. It was so predictable. I think they decided, well, we blew it by including the nurses and Annabelle in the beginning of The Conjuring, telling the true story, or what is said to be the true story of Annabelle. So now we can't grow on that. So now we have to make a totally fictional story based up on Annabelle. So where did the doll come from? And I think they just decided to take two or three small elements from the nurse's story, from about Annabelle, and then throw it into the mix. And they said, well, we have to have a story out in a year. So let's just take elements from every other horror film that ever existed and put it in there, and it will become, and we'll make a story out of it. So they threw in elements of Poltergeist with the TV going staticky, and Amityville with the phone going staticky, and the Grudge with the girl running towards the door and turning into, like, the girl screaming at her. Rosemary's Baby, huge. I mean, they called the mother Mia. I mean, Mia Farrow, come on. There was a huge Rosemary's Baby thrown in there. Drag Me to Hell with the demon's appearance, attach a Child's Play, Paranormal Activity. And of course, the worst thing they stole from was Three Men and a Baby with the image behind the curtain. It was just, it was horrible. You know, and that's the problem. Like I was saying earlier, the original Conjuring story, whether you believe in the paranormal or not, the people that it happened to believed it happened to them. So they told the story. It was written down. It was rewritten for a movie. And, you know, when you watch it, there's some consistency to it, where this is just a fictional adaptation of where did this doll come from. And because of that, you've got this whole borings, like I said, bits and pieces of other movies, some of which did well and some didn't, but they fell on that and then said, okay, it's getting boring, throw in some shock value, make something jump out in front of you. And where with the real story with Annabelle, if they had not included the nurses in the beginning of The Conjuring, they could have gone with that story a little bit more, and we would have had more, a little bit more consistency to the story, I think.
Well, and I think the nurse's story they could have expanded on. Because, I mean, basically what happened was, because they don't really tell you the whole thing in The Conjuring, but there was a nursing student and she shared an apartment with a roommate who was also a nurse. or a nursing student, and they had gotten this doll from her mom as a present. And they would come home and find that the doll was in different positions than when they'd left it. And at first, the movements were just sort of confined to the bed, like the arm would be shifted or the head would be looking the other way. Then it became worse, and then they would like find it on the floor, and then they would find it like sitting in a chair with its arms crossed when they know they had left it on the floor and their door was locked. And so basically the haunting of this doll was basically the doll was just moving all over the place on its own, and also it was writing notes, or supposedly it was leaving messages.
Yeah, they
saying,
on parchment
help me on parchment paper, which the girl didn't even own, but anyway, go on.
And they, she was saying that all these little things were happening, and it was freaking her out. So yeah, it's one of those things where it freaked her out to the point where she went and sought help. And so we saw the peak of her fear of what was going on with the doll at the beginning of The Conjuring. So they couldn't go any farther with that story.
They could have ended it with that. That would have made it a true prequel, but they could have told the story because was the other roommate there that the nurses were living with, or the boyfriend.
Right.
And he was like attacked. He claimed the doll had attacked him. I mean, they could have done that and beefed
it up. He woke up feeling that he was being strangled and the doll was staring at him. Now remember, this was in real life, this was a Raggedy Ann doll. So the doll was staring at him. I mean, those button eyes get me every time, I tell you.
I gotta go with Chrissy here. I think that story, and I know they told the outline of it in The Conjuring, not only would it have further tied it to The Conjuring, because really there's only the opening scene and one reference, not even named, to the Warrens that ties the two films together now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think it just sounds creepier to me. And yeah. I think they could have built with that and ended with that, you know, where the Conjuring started. I don't think it would have been a problem.
I think they would have been much better off getting the same cast from The Conjuring and remaking Amityville Horror so we could all forget about that Ryan Reynolds tragedy that happened a few years ago.
But, I mean, haunted dolls, the thing is, too, is that haunted dolls are not, the idea that a doll is haunted is not uncommon. So, I mean, there's a voodoo doll in New Orleans, which was sold to this woman in Texas. I think it was Galveston, actually. And she got the doll on eBay. And when she bought the doll, the owner who sent it to her basically told her, do not remove the doll from this silver casing or this storage box that it was in. And, of course, the woman did because, you know, she didn't listen or she didn't believe or whatever. And shortly after that, the doll was appearing to her in her dreams, and she would wake up and it was strangling her, like it had its arms on her neck and she felt like she was being choked. And every time she tried to sell it on eBay to get rid of it, she would sell it to somebody, pack it up, send it in the silver casing with the same instruction, and supposedly the person would get the box but not the doll, and the doll would end up back in her doorstep. So, I mean, these are just stories. I don't know. I cannot vouch for the fact that
that sounds
true.
Like a great eBay scam to me to make some money.
Yeah. Nate, is there no, like, ethical guidelines for you paranormal people that's like, you know, when don't sell cursed dolls that might kill people?
Well,
that maybe they belong in the dump someplace, or, you know, or the
Warren. Well, see, that's the thing with cursed dolls. You send them to the dump, they come home. It's, ethical.
Send them to the Warren's basement, wherever. You know, it seems like it's a little shady when you say, I'm selling you, I'm giving you the warning not to take out of the box, so I'm safe now. You can't sue me.
Well, take for example, do you guys remember the movie that came out few years ago, The Possessed, regarding the Dybbuk?
Yeah. Yes.
The gentleman who currently owns the Dybbuk box, Jason, he was on our show a few weeks ago, the Ghost Man and Demon Hunter show. And, you know, he was talking about the box and why he, one of my questions to him was, why do you still have it? You know, here's this box. It has the former owner, his hair was falling out. He was incredibly ill. He wanted to get rid of the box. And I was joking with him that it was like the imp in the bottle, that somebody has to buy it for like a less than they paid for it to get rid of it. And he said once he got it, he decided he had it. It couldn't go any further. He didn't want to pass that on to anybody else. So he went around and found everyone he could to have it sealed up and as protected as possible. But he, you know, he had warned us that weird things happen during interviews when he talks about it. Well, during the interview, I started like feeling all sweaty and hot and my back was on fire. And as soon as we ended the interview, I ran downstairs to Chrissy and my face was swollen up with welts. And she looked at my back because my back was all, hot and sweaty, and I pulled up the shirt and I had bruises on my back. And what? You know, it's one of the, and so we called Jason and Sean said, you know, can you send me a book on this Dybbuk box so we can find out more about it? And the day that Sean got the book, he takes it in his house, opens the book, and he hears a crash outside. And he goes running outside and he doesn't see anything, but the power goes out and he's calling the electric company saying the power's out on the street. Transformer must have gone. No, his house, his car got struck by lightning.
That was after the power went out.
Yeah. Well, no, when the power went out, the power went out and when his car got struck by lightning.
Oh yeah.
And, blew his car up. Literally the inside of the car exploded. And,
And what was the third thing?
And a gas line. That same night, a gas line broke under his house and, and gas started leaking out of his house. And they evacuated him from the neighborhood and, his air conditioner during the lightning strike got blown up and all this stuff happened to him the day he got the autographed book. So actually, oddly enough, I was supposed to be out meeting Jason tonight, but my flight got canceled, so I had to come home, and here I am with you guys tonight. I was gonna fly out to Des Moines, Iowa, to meet him or wherever it is.
Wow, that's pretty fascinating. There is on the disc of that movie you were referencing, The Possession. There is actually a pretty interesting special feature about the real Dybbuk box.
And what I was going with that was the fact that, you know, here's somebody who got the object and decided, I can't let this curse go on any further. So he looked up ways to try and seal it as best as possible and keep it to himself. I mean, when Chrissy and I first met, she wouldn't stay at my house because I'd collected so many haunted objects over the years. And, you know.
Or maybe she's just a good girl.
No.
Better she said it than me. But she would come into the house, and I had like, you know, if you go to the Warren's Museum or you go to John Zaffis's museum, the first half of the museum is not the haunted objects. It's a lot of like, let's face it, it's Halloween decorations to get people interested. And my personal home was not that much different. The whole downstairs was basically decorated for Halloween 365 days a year. And the upstairs was where I kept my collection. And like I had motion sensors on like Halloween decorations that would go off for no reason downstairs. And it freaked Chrissy out. She wouldn't stay at my house after that point.
Not by myself. That time when that crow went off by the stairs twice and I saw that shadow, I ran out of the house and left. I'm like, bye. I don't know what's wandering around in your house, but I'm not staying here.
But, you know, I brought home haunted objects and weird things would happen. And, you know, once you have them, you either have them for life because you don't want to get rid of them, or you have, because who are you going to give them to? Or you have to find somebody qualified to handle them. To get out, because it is irresponsible to just mail them off. I have a haunted doll that Sean bought for me off the internet.
It's not haunted.
Well,
I don't think it is.
Well, okay.
She doesn't talk to me.
I don't believe in psychics, so we're even. But you know,
I believe we're all figments of my imagination.
Yes. So you know, whether it is or not, if I said, oh, this thing is fine, let me get rid of it, and I gave it to somebody else, then I'm responsible if something happens. So, yeah, you're long way around, you're right.
Before we ask you questions of why Annabelle, the real, quote-unquote, real doll is, quote-unquote, haunted, and then we can go into the review of the film. I do have some questions from one of our listeners, Michelle Barkley, that I should have asked at the beginning of this episode, and because she wanted specifically to ask Christy and Nathan those questions, since she knew you guys were coming on tonight. So let's see here. The first question. In the Conjuring episode, Christy mentioned Nathan being into demon hunting, paranormal investigation, and how he has brought stuff home on his shoe. Can she give a good example or two of that?
Well, I can.
The Gettysburg Rock?
The Gettysburg Rock. Okay, but yeah, but you know what? I think you would tell the Gettysburg Rock story better, and then I'll tell the one.
Tell why you were scared of it, and then I'll tell the story.
Well, I was, okay. So Nathan had this rock that he had brought home from Gettysburg, which he's going to tell the story in a moment. And if you guys have heard this before, stop me, because I have told this on other shows, and I'm not sure if I told it on this one or not. But he brings home this rock from Gettysburg, and after that, I would be at his house. This was the same house where, you know, things would turn on for no reason or whatever. And, you know, there would be knocking on the front door. And I'd go to answer the front door, and there would be nobody there. And then there would be somebody going up and down the stairs. And then there was the business with your wallet that kept moving around.
No, that was Doug's wallet.
Doug's
showing
wallet.
Up next to my bed.
So that was an issue for me. And I didn't like being alone in the apartment because the rock did spook me because I wasn't quite sure. Wait, and there was that smell of pipe tobacco. So we thought maybe that, what were we thinking? Maybe it was a Southern soldier that was attached to it because of the, we don't know.
I don't make judgment calls.
But I was making up stories. I was at least having fun with it.
Well, you're an author. It's your job.
But there were other things in that apartment that I just didn't like. I just felt there was something else there that was always watching me that made me uncomfortable. The other thing was one time there was something that was in the basement downstairs, and that was right after I had moved. You had a box of something, I don't know, chicken feet or whatever is down there. And you told me, you said, don't move this box, don't play with this box, it's got sacred objects in it. And of course I didn't really remember that or pay attention. And when I was moving your books around, I moved the box. Well, shortly after that, there was something creeping around in that basement down there. And that, remember, that's when I had to have my friends over to get rid of it?
Yeah, you and your spooky friends.
Yeah, well, anyway, we did get rid of it.
So wait, I just want to make sure I have this straight. So he has this house full of stuff that makes you really, really nervous. And
yes.
So then he has this one box and he says, there's stuff in here that's particularly dangerous. Don't do anything with it. And you hear just blah, blah, certain death, blah.
You did hear at the beginning of this interview, we're married. So that's all she ever hears from me.
Eric, I was about to say, because I am a skeptic. I don't believe in this. And so I could expect me to tune you out and say, yeah. You believe. You have no excuse.
I know. He said, don't look in the box. Don't move the box, whatever he said. And I was like, well, if I'm just going to move it over here, it's no big deal.
Don't eat the apple.
The best part of that story is I come home and she's like, why do you have chicken feet in the basement? And I'm like, why do you know I have chicken feet in the basement? Now I have to kill you. No, it's, they were actually a gift from a voodoo priest. You know, there were specific things in that box that were gifts to me because I'm not a demonologist. I'm not a ghost hunter. I'm an occultist. I study what people believe and why they believe it. And I try and figure out what's happening to them because of their own belief systems. You know, because 9 times out of 10, you can explain this stuff away because of what people have been told is true through their life. And so that's what I do. And so here I've gone to all these rituals over the years. I have, gifts that have been given to me by, you know, Janet Farrah, Queen of the Witches of Ireland, and, you know, voodoo priests down in New Orleans, and Santerian priests here in priestesses here in Connecticut. And I keep those things very secure. And where's the one box she goes to?
it always the voodoo priestess in New Orleans? You don't get like the witch queen of Hoboken.
Well, that was pretty much who gave me the Santerian stuff.
Okay.
But you know, with the Rock, the whole Rock issue happened with the fact that the very first time Sean and I met, before the G&D show existed, we had we met on a ghost hunt. We were both reporters for Ghostly Talk Radio, and they said, you know, we're going out to Gettysburg. Do you want to join us? And I thought, of course I want to join you. It's Gettysburg.
Which is rumored to be extremely haunted, just for those of you who don't, might not be aware.
You know, it's,
and I'm not 100% dedicated to believing or not believing, but if you're going to find ghosts anywhere, a place where that many people died makes sense to me.
Yeah. Exactly. And so we went up to the hill, the Devil's Den and, the little flat, little round top. And that's where Chamberlain's charge had taken place. And we thought, you know, here's this spot where all these deaths occurred. And you hear stories told all the time about, the Bell Witch. The Bell Witch, if you take a rock from the Bell Witch's cave, the Bell Witch will follow you home.
The Bell Witch's cave is in
Kentucky, or something. Yeah, it's
right?
In Kentucky, yeah. And if you ever saw American Haunting, American Haunting, I think was the name of the movie. It's one of the oldest ghost stories here in America. It's the only ghost story that a president actually claimed to confirm that it was haunted. But, you know, it was the whole story about the Bell family and the Bell Witch. And if you bring a rock home from her cave, supposedly she'll follow you home. And so there's actually a barrel in front of the house full of rocks that people have taken home and then mailed back because they said horrible things happened once they got home with the rock. So there I am sitting with a whole bunch of ghost hunters, you know, and we're sitting there in probably the most haunted place in America. And we said, why don't we try an experiment? Why don't we bring home a rock? And so I brought home a rock, Sean brought home a rock, and Doug, who was the host of Ghostly Talk, brought home a rock, and we all brought them home and put them in our homes. And I put mine next to my front door, and Sean put his next to his little end table where he keeps his garage, his keys and everything when he comes home. And Doug put his on top of his computer. Well, Doug's computer literally melted from the inside. Sean's garage door kept opening and closing whenever he came home and put his keys next to the rock, and I kept getting people knocking at my front door. I'd go to the front door, and nobody was there. So I found this fascinating. You know, it's, in my opinion, it's not proof, but it's really great storytelling stuff, and it's on the verge of some kind of evidence, and maybe I can go further with this. But then Chrissy didn't want me to keep the rock anymore.
Oh, God, so. That was creepy.
But that's one of the stories of my bringing stuff home that kind of freaked her out.
But Doug mailed his back, didn't he? Because he didn't want.
No, he gave it to me.
Oh, so you still have it?
Yeah,
he's got another secret rock that you don't know about.
Place that I
a rock collection.
I have a secret place where I keep my collection now. It's with my other wife. never drink when you're doing an interview. But it's.
Yeah, I don't hear her laughing either.
I was laughing.
Goes on to the story she was saying with that, with Doug's wallet. Doug came and brought me back his rock because he didn't want it anymore, and I took it. And he was staying with me that weekend, and he kept losing his wallet, and we kept looking for it, and it kept showing up next to my bed. And I was like,
no matter what you did, it kept showing up next to my bed.
And I kept
it was looking, really weird.
I kept looking at him going, dude, either you're sneaking into my room, which really scares me, or something's going on. So it was just one of those bizarre occurrences. And I can't explain it. I can't explain the bruises on my back last week. I can't explain, but you know, I'm the first one to say none of this is proof, but it's something. It's evidence of something. And that's what I follow up on.
Now, her next question is for Nathan. Would he share the experience that made him really realize there were demons or paranormal activity, assuming that you believe either of that?
I do believe in paranormal activity. I won't say what it is because I have no clue. And like I've said for years, I believe there's a lot of evidence out there of paranormal activity. I just don't think there's any proof. And evidence can go in either way, in a court of law or in your own mind. But there were two incidences. The first being that when I was very young and first started getting interested in the paranormal, because I had such an interest and I had a lot of free time to assist the psychics, because back then you either worked with parapsychologists or psychics in this field. There was no one else doing it. The psychics that I worked with brought me in on a few cases, and the first case they ever brought me in on, well, the first big case they ever brought me on turned out to be a possession case. And things happened in that case that just scared the heck out of me. In fact, the movie you were talking about earlier, the one with the police officer, I forget the title off the top of my head now.
Deliver us from Evil.
I personally found that movie to be so over the top, but there was one scene in that movie where one thing happened that was so similar to something I had experienced during the possession case that I, the first possession case that I dealt with, that for the first time in years, I got scared inside a movie. And, so that sticks with me to this day. And the other thing was years later, I was working on a case where, a group of witches, I was working on, I was doing research on, neo-paganism. And I had shown up at a coven that had said that when they held their rituals, people were seeing things in the area and dark shadows. So I went down and I watched their opening ceremonies, and I took my notes, and then they got into their almost like business section of it where they talked about where they were going to have their bake sale or whatever. And I went upstairs to have a cigarette, and I walked outside, and the woman who owned the house was standing out there, and we're having a cigarette together. And all of a sudden I see this black shadow of a person just full form standing, walk across the lawn. And I looked at her and said, "Did you see that?" And her jaw was just on the ground, and she turned her head to me and just nodded. And, you know, normal, reaction that anybody would have in this situation, I ran after it. And I remember my foot hit a hole in the ground, just a divot, maybe 2 inches deeper than the rest of the ground around it. But all of a sudden, my foot felt like it was stuck in that hole. And as I tried to pull my foot out, my whole body started to shake, and I fell down and had what they said was similar, not exactly, like a seizure. And I started yelling, and they carried me inside and got me some water and pulled me out of it. But, you know, it's the only time in my life that I felt that I was attacked and I hadn't been prepared for it. I do believe in, like I said, I believe there's something out there. I'm not going to say what it is, but I do believe there are spiritual forces out there of some kind. Some of them aren't nice. And that particular time, yeah, I took a beating. Since then, I've taken the time to learn how to protect myself in simple ways through my day-to-day life and in more direct ways when I go out on cases.
And when was that? I was just trying to remember that day that I came home was about earlier this year. And I don't remember where I was, but I felt like something had attached to me. Do you remember? And I came in the house and you blew on my neck. You made me stand in front of the door and you blew on my neck and it left, whatever it was. That was
weird. I do remember that.
I don't remember where I was, though.
Yeah, well, years of learning all the little tricks and trades of the underground pagan community really pay off for me. Can't you see all the cachet I'm making from this?
Now, she has another question for Nate. Would you recount the scariest thing that has ever happened to you in your line of work, unless one of those things you just mentioned were?
I would say that the possession case, like I said, has stuck with me forever. And like I said, I've worked on two other possession cases other than that. One I thought was totally fake, whether it was fake or not, whether the person was faking or just sick, I don't know, but I don't think it was a possession case. And the other one, the Catholic Church got involved, and once they got involved, they asked me to step down. But so that was the only one that I've ever seen through to the end that I really thought was a true possession case, and that stuck to me to this day. And the case where I was attacked, I think, was in fact the scariest thing that I've ever done. I mean, I've spent the night in some of the most haunted, claimed to be, whether they are or not, haunted locations in America. And, you know, when I say I slept there. It doesn't really bother me anymore.
So you're kind of like John Cusack from 1408.
Oh, well, the difference is I believe.
Yeah, okay.
All right, very good. There's one other question, it was for all of us, but maybe me, Eric, Abe, and Mike will answer it in our next episode, depending on our time. But for Christy and Nate, she asks, what one cryptoid or cryptid do you wish was real?
Oh, well, for me, that's pretty easy. The one that I really wish was real is Champ. Champ is like the Lake Champlain in Vermont. It's Lake Champlain in Vermont's his answer to Nessie, basically. And when I was a kid, we used to go up to Lake Champlain all the time, and we'd ride the ferry back and forth, and I would always be scanning the water going, oh, I hope I see Champ, I hope I see Champ. I even had a guide to hunting for Champ that I had bought at a souvenir shop up there when I was about, I don't know, 12 years old. But if Champ were real, I would have to change careers and go study it. And I'd love to have an excuse to live on Lake Champlain and chase monsters all day. So that's my cryptid I wish existed.
Why would I want any of them to exist? Really, why would I want that? You ever stand out in the middle of the woods in the middle of the night? It's scary enough. Do I really want something that's bigger and meaner than me out there with me? It's bad enough that bears are crawling into my neighborhood. Mystical creatures, I wouldn't mind, like a leprechaun, because I could really use three wishes. But, or is that genies? That's genies. Never mind. Genies. We'll go with genies. Besides, she had a great costume on television. I would rather, I think, if I had to have a cryptid be real, probably the Fox Monster. I would love to know that the Fox Monster was real, just because the whole, what was the movie, the Boggy Creek Monster.
Oh, the Falk Monster,
The Legend of Boggy Creek. I would love to be able to go down and go, look at that, the Legend of Boggy Creek Monster right there, and it just had a big impact on my childhood. Yeah.
That movie scared the crap out of me when
I watched it every chance I got.
Oh my god. It was always on Channel 11, like in the afternoon, and I would watch it and get scared.
Yeah, I missed a lot of school.
Before we get into the review of the movie and talk about specific scenes and such, the case study Annabelle doll, you guys mentioned that Annabelle was moved around when they weren't home and all that. But what is the reason it's supposed to be, quote-unquote, possessed or a supernatural doubt or whatever the word is?
I don't think they know.
It's demonic attachment. The Warren's explanation for it is demonic attachment, which is, we'll get into this in one of the scenes later, is not a, one of the things I didn't like about this particular film is they make a comment about the, doll being possessed by, the demon when it's an attachment, and which is shown in the one scene where the demon picks up the doll. And to show it's connected to the doll, but it's an attachment which is generally used in the definition of the levels of possession. Attachment being the first one, where it's attached to you. In an object, a demon can only attach itself to an object because it can't possess an object because an object isn't alive. It doesn't have a soul. It doesn't have anything like that.
Right, but as far as how the doll got possessed,
how it got possessed, nobody knows.
Well, possessed is the wrong word, but you know, yeah, how it got attached, no one knows. And I think sometimes too, when you're, and Nathan could probably speak better to this than I could, but in cases where items are attached or homes are haunted, items being attached is a little bit more difficult to explain. It could have been something as simple as it was in a home where a lot of bad abuse happened, which, you know, invited a negative force in, and the negative force couldn't attach to the people involved for whatever reason, so it attached itself to an object.
The actual attachment to the real Annabelle doll is explained even in the movie. when the nurses say they were getting this message from the spirit of a little girl, and they told it could inhabit the body of the doll, and it turned out to be demonic. So that's how the real Annabelle doll ended up being attached.
Well, but in the real case, there was an issue where they had brought in a medium, and at first the medium said that it was the same medium. This is what's kind of odd about it. The same medium on two different occasions. On one occasion, she said that Annabelle was the spirit of a girl
who had died when the house burned down.
Who died when the house burned down or something. I don't remember exactly. But the same medium later on came back and said, oh no, Annabelle died in a car accident down the road, and that's who this is. So,
and this is why I don't trust psychics or mediums.
You know, you don't know about that. She changed her own story, and that gets a little bit, dicey.
And now I'll never have another psychic or medium on my show, but, cause now they'll say, you said you don't believe in us, but, it's tough. It's tough because are there people with abilities out there? There very well could be. I know some people who make some great predictions, but I just don't know about psychics or mediums because it's, you know, we all get feelings of something that we think could be happening or might be happening or should have happened or will happen. And I kind of get the feeling that psychics and mediums are people, maybe they don't see more than we do, but they just go with it more. You know, it's
All right, very well. So with that, I guess we'll go into the movie and talk spoilers. So at this point, for listeners, we will be discussing spoilers. All right, so where do we want to begin? Who wants to speak first? Because I know Abe, Mike, and Eric, you guys have been quiet. But again, we got some really interesting guests that have a lot of stuff to tell us. So
yeah, guys, I'll keep quiet now.
Okay, so, well, I guess we can start from the beginning then. Just like in The Conjuring, our film begins with the nurses who kind of discuss what we remember from The Conjuring. The doll would try to write messages, could be disposed of, and was a real nuisance for a while. But we are learning just what exactly Annabelle is. Not necessarily her origins, but sort of her own little story. And it follows it's a small suburban white bread family. How describe it? I mean, what's the time frame here exactly?
Let's just say, in my opinion, I looked at it, I kind of felt that it was the Mad Men of the supernatural. And
it opens in 1969.
The year of Helter Skelter. Because it
okay. Yes. Right. That's right. That's right. Because the Marilyn Manson and everything like that. Yes.
Not Marilyn Manson.
That's
Charles Manson.
Charles Manson. Not Marilyn Manson. Why is it Marilyn Manson?
I don't know about anyone else, but I actually forgot for the first, 10 minutes of the film or so that this was a period piece. I don't know why.
It was the owls on the funky crocheted artwork
funky
on the walls.
Funky 1970s owls everywhere.
Yeah. It's also the way everyone was dressed, too, you know?
Yeah, and it literally, maybe it's because of the actress reminding me so much of the actress from Mad Men, but I was literally watching going, this is the Mad Men of the spirit world. Okay.
Well, also in that opening, Abe, we hear the music box from The Conjuring.
Right.
It's
yeah.
the same music, and I think in this one they attach it to the baby's mobile.
I was buying popcorn.
Oh.
No, I'm kidding.
Yeah. Which I honestly thought was a little bit weird. I was like, why would they have the same? I don't know. I thought that was a real stretch, but anyway.
Easter egg.
And there's also, and then we open up and we see them in a church, the couple. Mm-hmm. And that was kind of interesting, I thought, because we see them thumb wrestling in church. We see the husband and the wife and they're sitting there and they're thumb wrestling during the sermon. And that was a moment I liked because it told us something about the type of relationship they had to each other. They were sort of a playful married couple. And we got a lot of information in just that one exchange, including the fact that they obviously don't take their faith very seriously. you know? They kind of...
And that he cheats at thumb wrestling.
Yes, he cheats.
He was using his right hand to her left. That's always a cheat move.
Well, and here's the thing about this couple is that whatever quibbles we may have with the plot and the story, I thought the actors here were decent, especially Mia. I thought she was pretty good.
Annabelle Willis. Who's she from?
Yeah, Annabelle Willis is the actress' name. And the guy was kind of a little Ken doll for my taste. But other than that, I thought they were pretty good. And I particularly like the fact that it wasn't like a whole lot of movies where the husband is just like, "Ooh, I don't believe you. You're crazy." He was like, "Well, if you're worried about this, I'm going to be worried about this."
And yeah, he's very different from the typical husband in the horror movie, you know?
Yeah, so well, I thought that was pretty cool.
She points that out, too, when she goes, "Thank you for believing me." Mm-hmm. And because we needed to be explained to us.
Now, the name, the lead actress, Annabelle Wallace, like we discussed, this coincidental name has the same name as the doll. Her character in the film is called Mia Gordon. Obviously, as you said, Nate, references to Mia Farrow and probably Ruth Gordon, who won the category for the same film, Rosemary's Baby. And
what a coincidence for a true story that they happen to have that name.
Isn't it, though?
So basically what happens is, there's a neighbor that goes to the church. I'm assuming it's a Catholic church, though. It could be Episcopal or Eastern Orthodox, but I'm assuming it's Catholic. And because the guy's name's Perez, the minister, and most folks with Spanish last names, the majority, I should say, are usually Catholics. They are kind of buddies with the neighbors, and we discover that the neighbors have a daughter that is run away as an adult to similar, you know, like a hippie type person, and they don't know the whereabouts, right? And then we have the scene where they're watching news, and we see the Manson murders and all that stuff. So I guess these two items kind of allude to what's going to happen and sets the whole film in motion, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought what was interesting about the way that they established that the girl had disappeared, that the daughter has run away or vanished, we see Annabelle's mother praying for her daughter to return. And, of course, you know, we know after a few scenes that Annabelle does return. So that prayer is answered, but it's not with the expected results. She comes back as a possessed cult member, like a, you know, a demon from hell, if you will. And I sort of liked how that played with the whole pet cemetery idea.
Yeah.
Like, don't bring things back from the dead. Don't wish for something back from the dead, because you get back.
Sometimes dead is better.
Dead is better.
Dead is better. Yeah.
Spoil the man, Heartless Estonia.
So, yeah, for people who haven't seen the film, and a clarification, the movie is basically saying that the name Annabelle is actually not the doll, but the neighbor's daughter's name, right? I mean, and then I don't know how the doll is named Annabelle after the fact, or it was coincidence that both the daughter next door as well as the doll is Annabelle.
And the actress? Now we're just getting crazy coincidence here. It's a...
And how does everybody know the doll's, well, this is getting to the ending of the film, when the doll mysteriously disappears and, you know, reappears somewhere else, how do they know the doll's name is Annabelle?
Well, this is where in the real life story we said the psychic told them.
Oh, the right. Medium. Okay.
Okay.
But you're right, Mike. In this movie, it's because Mia keeps seeing who she figures out is Annabelle. Or the she sees the picture
of the
little
girl.
Later when the detective comes in and
they'll get to that part. Right, let them tell their story.
It's not our story.
So what happens is
I'm not taking responsibility for this.
Basically, one night they're sleeping at night, and then there's a murder that occurs across to the neighbor's house, the ones that they're friends with from the church, and the wife Mia says she heard a scream, which we the audience don't hear, but she does. And so her husband goes to check it out, and instead of calling the cops because he doesn't believe that anything happened, because his wife said she thinks she heard a scream, not actually heard a scream. And so what happens is we find out that the daughter and her boyfriend had come back, killed her parents, and then for some reason they decide to go into the neighbor's house, which is Mia's and her husband's house, and attempt to kill them as well.
Well, I kind of thought that the reason that they ended up running to Mia's house was because they were over there. They had killed Annabelle's parents, and then the husband showed up, and that they were startled and looking to run away. And so they took refuge because of the whole unlocked door business.
Yeah, that was my perception too.
And let's not forget, the husband kind of walked in there saying, I'm going to go check it out. They do the same for us.
Yeah.
But he, you know, wasn't rushing to it or anything like that. Like you said, she thinks she heard something, and he thinks he lives in a safe neighborhood, but we're shown by the fact that he doesn't lock his doors.
And this was a really interesting period in history, because it was 1969. So it was really at the summer of love, you know, was over basically at this time, if it took place in the fall or whatever time of year it took place. But that was the summer of love, was 69.
The summer of love took place in the fall?
No. I'm saying the summer of love was over if the movie took place in the fall.
Oh, okay, okay.
And that's why she's pregnant.
Yeah. There you go. There you go. But the thing is, it was a different time. The world was changing. And things, we also have, of course, the whole civil rights thing is still going on. And in fact, cults were a very big concern. Charles Manson, they make the reference to Helter Skelter. So for those listeners out there who might be too young to remember, or, well, I wasn't even born yet, but I read the book Helter Skelter. Charles Manson was basically a drifter, and he wanted to be a musician, but he failed. And this was back in the late 60s. And he was in San Francisco in 69, and he had a personality which was attracted a lot of young women. And they became followers, and they called themselves the family. So that's what they mean when they refer to the Manson family. But this philosophy, and the reason that Helter Skelter, I believe, is mentioned, it was a philosophy that he had, which a lot of people, a lot of historians today think he was full of crap, that he just kind of made it up to keep his followers attracted, you know, near him. He believed that there was going to be a race war, Armageddon. He believed that the black people would rise up and invade white men's homes and destroy them and commit all sorts of bloody acts within their homes. And that the blacks would then take over the cities. And that while this was going on, he and his family, which by that time he had estimated to be 200,000 people or whatever, were going to hide out in the desert and wait for this to be over. And then he said, when the blacks fail, we're going to come back in, me and my family, and we're going to take over all the cities. And that is what Helter Skelter meant.
And to him, he thought that the Beatles believed the same that he did and that they'd written the song for him.
Yes.
Now, to be fair to Charles Manson, I've
still because we need to be fair to Charles.
Well, I'm still hearing people peddling the coming race war shit, and have been for the last 30 years. But it's coincidentally, you know, this is, you know, she comments on the door being unlocked, and the neighborhood has changed, and of course turns on the news, and they're talking about the Manson family, and as is the case for a horror movie, wouldn't you know it? Just that night, their neighbors attacked and killed by cultists. But I actually, I did like the, I actually did like the scene where she's in her, in the bedroom, and you just see the attack through the window.
Yes, I did like that.
Yeah, that was really cool.
I wasn't happy about the really loud music sting that came with it, but just the way that it was shot and set up, I really kind of liked the way that was handled.
I mean, since this is the same film that was made by the same folks that would make Insidious and The Conjuring, there were a number of stingers of music or scary sounds to make you jump and I did jump at that scene, not probably because of what we saw, even though that was pretty impressive how they did that whole scene and filmed it. I mean, the director is a well-known cinematographer for many films prior to directing this film, but the stinger oddly did work for me because I jumped out of my seat that moment. And the setup was pretty cool, and the police eventually come. The wife gets stabbed.
And the baby. She gets stabbed and the baby.
And the cops basically shoot and kill the two intruders. And Annabelle is holding.
They kill the guy. Annabelle kills herself.
That's
her own throat.
Yeah, that's actually right. You're right. Because she locks herself in the future room, or the nursery, I should say, of where the baby's going to be. And holding the Annabelle doll, you're right, slits her throat and then makes a mark on the wall with her
symbol
blood.
On the wall.
Yes, exactly.
Actually, I thought one of the scariest moments in this film for me had nothing to do with the ghost or the possession. It was that moment when Mia turns and sees Annabelle alive in her house, and she's holding the doll, and she looks all very Ring-esque, you know, like with the dark hair over her face, and she just goes, "I like your dolls." Oh my god. Oh my god, I couldn't even handle it. And then I was like, wow, and she's still alive.
And I wondered why I came home that night and my wife had all the lights turned on in the house.
And the TVs, I still can't sleep without the TVs on just because of that one image of her. It's freaking me out. All right, so anyway.
Was it like the end of Poltergeist where you come home and all the dolls are out on the porch?
But it's okay because they came back in on their own.
All right. Well, at this point, Eric, let's give a synopsis of the film, and then we'll pick and choose parts of the film and talk about it.
Okay. Synopsis. Demon attaches itself to the doll. Freaky stuff happens. Wife thinks she's going crazy, but it's a demon that wants a soul. She thinks it's the baby's soul, but the baby can't offer its own soul. So it actually is trying to trick her into offering her own soul, which almost happens, but then it doesn't, and somebody else makes a sacrifice instead. The end.
Yeah, fortunately, there's an award winner on the set who can do that for them.
So who is the award winner?
Alfre Woodard, didn't she win something? I don't remember which of the various awards she won, whether it was Emmy or an Oscar. But she I know she won something at some point.
That's I think true. It was an Emmy. I think it was an Emmy. I found it interesting that the whole premise of Annabelle being the attached doll at this point comes from when Annabelle the girl, a drop of her blood falls into the eye of Annabelle the doll, and you know. It gets absorbed into the doll, which to me, I sat there going, what the heck does that have to do with anything?
But there was a symbol on the wall, you see.
Oh, yes. And that wasn't like stolen for a quick fix from Paranormal Activity 4 or whatever.
Now, to be fair with the movie, I mean, a lot of these films that are supernaturally based horror, I mean, they have things like this where someone dies and then they curse something in the house or an object or whatever becomes possessed. Or in this case, you know, the blood, you know, we could argue, is that a big deal? Or I mean, it makes no sense. But, I mean, it's quote-unquote supernatural. And who says, you know, any the lay person who comes in to see a supernatural film, I guess that you could argue that's believable, right? I mean, it's just a scary movie, and okay, I see how the dog got possessed because the blood of the murderer, devil worshiper, because we discover that she's a cultist and that she was not just a cultist, but worshiped the devil. Her blood being absorbed by the doll could possess the doll, assuming she has done stuff in black magic and whatever. To be fair.
But the thing that irked me about that whole series of whatever, was which is it? Is it the ghost of Annabelle or is it a demon? Because it seems to be both. And
I thought Annabelle was a manifestation of the demon.
I have to say, I think you're exactly right about that. It's, okay. And that's one of the things that irked me about the movie was demons, except in like the rarest, poorest written movies that you can find, demons don't manifest themselves as themselves. They manifest themselves as something else.
Politicians?
Yes. Well, just look at our last few elections. But they show up and they manifest themselves as something else. And in this one, I was telling Chrissy just before the show, I was really disappointed that they felt they had to keep showing us the demon, because it obviously already manifested itself as the girl. The girl's blood, that was the only explanation I could find for the girl's blood in the doll to begin with, was it gave him a conduit. The doll wasn't so much the conduit into this world as the girl Annabelle was. And that's why he kept appearing to her. And then he appears a third time as the priest.
Right.
And I just was sitting there going, okay, now you're just, it's a bad definition, but you're mixing metaphors.
I was with you with the demon possessed killer doll thing, but now you're pushing the limits here. I would go with the blood, because I kind of understand what Eric's saying, but if I was trying to be kind to the film, you could say demons are summoned usually with a blood sacrifice or something like that. And, that it was the blood that drew the demon to the doll rather than the blood being what channeled. So yeah, that's kind of where I would end up going with that, but it's easy to understand that there weren't all that clear to the audience, at least not at the beginning of the film, as to what was going on with the little doll.
Yeah, I wasn't really certain as the motivation of the cultists in the first place. Like, I mean, was the girl Annabelle looking for the doll in the first place, or was she looking for something else?
There is a quick explanation to this when they're going through the books, and they explain that they need the blood of her family, and then the blood of an innocent, which you realize she got the blood of her family by committing the murder of her parents. Yeah. And that would explain actually why she kind of went into the next house, in that they needed the blood of the innocent.
By stabbing the mother in the stomach.
The baby. The mother or the baby. And they got the blood of the mother, because if you remember, she pricks her finger when things are going on.
Oh, that's right. Okay. Yeah.
All right. Any further things about how the doll was possessed? Or do we pretty much wrap that up? I don't know if I'm missing anything.
I think we could all agree it was poorly explained and move on.
Yeah.
And I think that it's a horror movie, and just like with most horror films, we don't need to know how the zombies came back, how Dracula went from being a historical king to a vampire explain how Jason keeps coming back to life. We just know that we needed this doll to become evil somehow, and crazy woman blood. There we go.
Oh, you go. But you know what? Again, to be fair for the story, if we're going through the perspective of Mia, her character, basically through the story, she's the main character, and where you go through 90% of the film, it's her perspective, then maybe we aren't really supposed to know the whole story. All we know is that there's these crazy cultists that killed their parents and then came next door and did some stuff over there. And
But let me ask, did anybody else cringe as badly as I did when she got stabbed in the baby?
No,
you don't care? All right.
Well, you know what? It comes back to what you said, Nate, which is I predicted that neither of them were going to die.
Yeah.
I figured that the baby and her were going to be safe, even though they did get stabbed.
But I mean, I did too, but still, there are general lines that don't get crossed in movies, and that's one of them, and they crossed it. So it took me by surprise.
Yeah, but you know what? There's a lot of films. See, I was willing, to consider the possibility that they were going to off the baby because it wasn't born yet.
Yeah, Eric.
Because once you see the baby, you don't usually kill the baby. But there's been a lot of movies.
Don't kill the baby.
But
at least it was inside.
Right. There's been a lot of movies where mom lost the baby quote unquote lost.
Oh, true. True.
And so I consider that as a possibility that she might have lost the baby, and then maybe that would end up fostering some unhealthy attachment to this doll or some weird shit like that. So I wasn't sure where they were going to go with it. I wasn't really trying to run ahead of the film with it. I just held it open as a possibility. So yeah, I did get a bit of a twinge of the ooh, you know. Though I did also see it coming. So I
That again goes back to that book where they needed the blood of the family and the blood of the innocent. They stabbed they killed the parents and then they stabbed her in the baby. And that's how they got the two bloods, and then she committed suicide to complete the ritual.
Eric, never, ever, ever read my short story, The Thing Inside. Ever.
Well, now I have.
Eric is not allowed to read that story, ever.
And what's the
okay, and you're not allowed to look at the box in the basement.
And what's the book that's in, Chrissy?
That's in Unnatural Tales of the Jackalope.
Okay. Now, I want to get back.
Are there natural tales of the jackalope?
No.
Yes, actually there are, but we don't have time tonight.
Okay.
Eric, I think the most disturbing scene of the whole film that really made me cringe was when the mother, Mia, was taking the Annabelle doll and clubbing it against the crib.
And then she that is the moment I was referring to as the one spectacular moment in the movie.
That was amazing. And everybody in the audience I was in, literally there was a woman about three rows back who screamed when she saw the baby on the floor. She absolutely screamed. That scene was fantastic.
For me, that one scene was worth the price of admission.
Yeah.
Because they did a really good job with it. Basically what happens is she's freaking out because all this demon-related activity has been going on. Only now she's well aware of the fact that this doll is no good, and there's some seriously evil shit happening with it. And she goes into the baby's room looking for the baby. She can't find her baby, and the doll is in the crib. Annabelle's in the crib. And she snaps, and she picks up this doll, and she starts just slamming this doll against the crib and bashing its head against the crib to the point where the crib actually bends. And then throws it across the room, and then all of a sudden they cut, and instead of being the doll on the floor with Tishu, it's her baby on the floor. Oh, and you're just like, you're just like, oh, holy shit. She hallucinated the doll, and she just bashed her own baby's brains in.
Yeah, and at that point you start seeing Brad Pitt going, what's in the crib? What's in the crib? What's in the crib?
No, and then they drag it out for a little bit, and they actually have this really well done reaction scene from the lead actress where she thinks she's killed her own baby, and then about 60 seconds later they reveal that it's just another doll, and she still doesn't know where the baby is.
But it was the giggling blonde doll, which again was very obviously placed a few scenes early, like when they were unpacking. That was kind of one of my largest issues with this movie, is that you always have to justify your ending, and you always want things to come back later. You don't just want to throw stuff in there for the hell of it. But this movie was literally like, just like Annabelle the crib with Annabelle, this was like bashing the viewer on the head. Every time you turned around, there was an obvious, like, the door is unlocked.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. But I gotta say that cut to the baby on the floor was one of my favorite moments, in a movie in a while. That was just like, oh, it gut punched me. It was good.
And that was awesome because that was the one moment I think in this film that I did not see coming at all. Like, I was completely shocked and horrified.
I didn't see that coming, but when the second she picked up the doll, I was like, oh, it's going to be your baby. I have to say, the thing that got me, and obviously they couldn't actually do this because there's, you know, it would ruin the entire story for the movie, but anybody who's had any dealings with Catholics would tell you that babies get baptized in the Catholic Church, and when they're baptized, their souls are safe until they take their first communion or reach the age where they would be confirmed if they get, and then, you know, they're responsible for their own soul. But, all the priest had to say was, your baby, the demon can't take your baby's soul. And then Mia wouldn't be running around trying to save her baby's soul.
Right. But I don't think the priest knew, even believed it, right? Until
they had
in the hospital.
Yeah, and I don't think by the time the priest understood what was going on, I don't think there was an opportunity for him to tell Mia.
Yeah.
Right. And I don't think Mia found out through the priest anyway, right? She found out through the books. She read
True.
Or something.
No, but there was that problem with the priest that you mentioned, though, with the way...
Well, yeah.
That was your biggest issue.
Having, you know, getting involved with this at such an early age and working with the church on a few different occasions, only once with the Catholic Church, like I said, and they asked me to leave. But with the Orthodox Catholic Church and with the Protestant Church and several other churches, you know, there are prayers and there are protections and there are blessings. And this priest doesn't offer one blessing for the family. I mean, that's the first thing when a family has an issue like this, they offer a blessing to the family. Then if they actually believe there's an issue, they do a blessing for the home. And having traveled with objects that are said to be attached, I know there are prayers we're supposed to say while we're driving, and this guy's listening to the baseball game. I was like, okay.
Yeah, but that was the, you know, Bob Gibson and stuff.
That was 69. Yeah,
get some good players back then.
Yeah, the Dodgers had a good team back then.
Oh goodness,
that's right. They did.
But then again, you know, like I said, I'm not expecting the average viewer to see this, but I would have at least expected him to do a prayer more than the sign of the cross when he picks up the doll.
But you know what, though, he could be a quote-unquote realist, which is like the priest in The Exorcist, which is Damien in The Exorcist, which is, there is no such things. I'm a psychiatrist, and what people thought were possessions are just mentally ill people. And but this guy
he's the one who tells them this is a demon.
But was that when he took the doll?
Takes the doll. He tells her this is a demon, and he doesn't offer one prayer? He doesn't even offer to join them in prayer. I was like, I realize we're living in a day and age where prayer is uncool. God bless you. We live in a day and age where prayer is uncool, and maybe they didn't want to put that in there, but there would have been prayers involved here.
From a priest, yes, you're right.
Yeah. Well, see, it could have been an issue of, does it slow the film down? But yeah, this feels like it's done on the cheap without people thinking about it. Because like that ritual stuff is what makes a movie like The Exorcist feel more authentic. Even if it's not real, it's atmosphere. It's dressing. It's the Halloween decoration.
But you know what though, Mike? If in my opinion, like in The Conjuring, I thought it was boring and too long, and The Exorcist did it perfectly. So if they had done it, exorcism films, I would say most of them, it's boring and crappy. And then there's a handful like The Exorcist that is really cool. And, you know, so if they had done it, would it have just been, oh, this is just The Conjuring all over again?
He could have muttered under his breath why he did the sign of the cross on them and done it a couple times in the house and taken the doll and left. You know, we could have seen a reaction to the home or to him. You know, that was one of the great things with the original Amityville Horror. The priest comes in and starts doing his blessing, and right off the bat, everything goes to hell, and he gets out of there. But we don't see any of that, and despite the fact he just told them that it's a demon, he himself shows his discomfort with the doll by throwing it in the back seat, and then he doesn't do anything to protect himself, which threw me for...
That's really odd,
threw me, having dealt in this field and looking for a little bit of believability in at least the reactions of the people, that threw me completely.
See, I must have missed it, because I assumed he just looked at the doll like Mike looked at the doll when you said, Mike, why the hell would anybody want to have this doll? It's ugly as hell. And he just tossed it in the back seat. But you're right. I may have just missed that whole thing. I thought he was just taking the doll to... nice and he didn't believe any of it, and it appears that he did believe it.
Well, but it's perfectly okay if they wanted to have this priest be that sort of realist character who doesn't necessarily go for all this stuff. But if you're going to go that route, then in terms of storytelling, you need to give your audience a heads up that that's who he is. And we never really got to know the priest.
Yeah,
I mean, he says a few lines and that's it. We don't know who he is. It's not like The Exorcist where we actually get to know this priest a little bit.
He's also the one that, like, offhandedly remarks about the Warrens. So yeah. He has some connection to this aspect of the belief of the church.
Yeah.
Let's and just cut to the totally chase. He's a bad priest.
He's a bad priest. He deserves to get thrown out of the church doors and – wait, no, that happened. Never mind.
It sounds like the next Danny Trejo movie. I was like, bad priest. He's coming to your town. Kick ass for the Lord.
As long as we're on the subject of things that kind of maybe didn't work, Kevin Letts and I were talking a little bit on Facebook. And I thought, I don't know what you guys think, and I'm dying to know what you think, but what I thought was a little bit messed up to me was when they move into the apartment and Mia, the last box, she pulls out the doll again. And the explanation for this is he says, oh, I threw it out. And she says, oh, well, I guess things got messed up in the fire. What? What? Like, nobody says that did not work for me at all. It should have been if they wanted to do that. Because what that implies is they didn't pack their own stuff. Somebody else did it. Plus, somebody went into the trash can, if we're thinking realistically. But there was no, geez, this is weird. You mean you told me you threw it out and now it's in the box?
The husband says, hold it, I threw that out. This doesn't make any sense. And then the wife says, you know what? It doesn't matter because this was a gift that you gave me and, you know, the murder and whatever, it doesn't matter that she held the doll because this was a gift from you to me. But then he just drops it and goes, yeah, all right, no problem. But
yeah, exactly. Well, it's weird. Yeah.
Well, it's at that point, though, where it's not – they're not thinking there's anything supernatural about the doll. So this is like, honey, did you eat that last cupcake? No. So no one's accounting for that last cupcake, and yet the last cupcake's gone, but we don't – well – I don't assume, I don't know what you guys do, I don't assume that, like, you know, evil demon has absconded with that last cupcake.
Well, yeah, personally, anytime my cupcakes go missing, I assume something evil has happened.
Well, I just think maybe the mixed signals approach would have worked a little better there and would have been a little bit more realistic. For example, she pulls it out of the box and she thinks the husband maybe didn't throw it away. Because it was so expensive. And instead of asking about it, she decides to quietly keep it. And then when the husband comes in, he sees it. And instead of questioning her and says, oh my God, I threw that out, he assumes that she had changed her mind earlier and pulled it out of the trash. And I think that would have been a little bit of a better explanation. And the way they could have shown that would be to have her utter something under her breath about how sweet he kept it anyway. And then maybe the husband, oh, she must have changed her mind. Because he can even walk in and say, oh, I see you changed your mind about the doll. And he never has to mention the trash.
I see your point. I don't think it's the biggest problem with this movie.
No, I agree. And I think the fact that they don't really dwell on it, each fills in the blanks in a way that makes sense to them. And where, like, she could have thought he just put in a box outside or just thrown it outside and somebody That's picked true. It up after the fire. So there's all sorts of ways that they could imagine, you know, this happening. And just shrug their shoulders and just blow it off because it's not worth – it really isn't worth thinking about because don't at this point – well, we do because we've seen The Conjuring and we've seen the commercials and the trailers. But they have no reason to think other than its appearance that this is an evil doll bent on destroying them and taking their souls to hell.
Oh, come on. Look at that doll. We all know it's an evil doll.
All right. Now, Abe, well, since you've been quiet for a bit – pick a scene that you want to discuss in this film, and let's go from there. Because there's a lot of good scenes, there's a lot of flawed scenes. Which one did you want to bring up?
I guess we should probably talk about the secondary important character, the woman at the bookstore.
Alfre Woodard. Four-time Emmy winner.
Evelyn is the character's name.
Evelyn, thank you, yes. So, as Mia's trying to find out more and more about the cult and the stories going on around the house, she just goes to a small local bookstore where she meets Evelyn, who seems to know plenty about what it sees she's trying to figure out, and decides to help out find a few books here and there, and they start chatting up. And we learn that poor Evelyn had lost a daughter to some car accident when she fell asleep at the wheel. And that's mostly her character set up as her own little small arc. I guess aside from resolving the conflict, I can't really see what other purpose the character had in a way.
Let me say this. Eric, you were the first one. You talked to me offline, I think, whether it was a text or an instant message. You mentioned how this film was very much like Rosemary's Baby. And this character here, besides what she does at the end and what happens, she really is like the Hutch character from Rosemary's Baby. In Rosemary's Baby, Hutch is the older gentleman that is friends with the Mia Farrow character, Rosemary, and is the one that gives her the books about, and knows that Carlton talks about the building, how this building, you know, there was witches that lived here and blah, blah, blah. This character here, Evelyn, in this movie, is similar to the Hutch character in Rosemary's Baby, because she's the one that brings out the books, talks about possessions and all these other things to lead and answer questions that us, the audience, may not know, never mind. Mia's character in this film would not know. And Hutch did the same thing in Rosemary's Baby. So that is a pretty good parallel, I thought. And I could see why you, Eric.
You're, by the way, you're confused. I didn't say any of this. It was somebody else.
All right, then it must have been you, Mike. Because I
this movie has that effect on a lot of people. It's okay. It's
fine, man. Warps, it does things to you.
Yeah, I talked to somebody on instant message, whether it was – maybe it was Kevin Letts.
It wasn't me. I haven't talked to anybody about this.
Okay, so then it was either Kevin Letts or David Koning, a couple of listeners, and a group of people on our Facebook page. Someone mentioned it. Maybe it was Jason Lloyd. It was somebody. And either way, that valid point that was mentioned, the Evelyn and the Hutch character, is just another example of the Rosemary Baby point. And Nate, you brought up that fact at the beginning of this podcast. You said it listed like 7 or 8 films. I would have added Helter Skelter and Insidious as well. And
yeah.
You specifically mentioned Rosemary's Baby. And it, never mind the tall building, never mind the expository character, in this case, Evelyn and Rosemary's Baby, Hutch. And then, of course, what's going on with a mother that's pregnant and all these other things. So,
and that baby carriage is right out of Rosemary's Baby.
Yeah, the baby carriage in the basement.
Yeah. Oh, that was another.
I just went, oh, God, really?
That was another scene in the movie I kind of liked, was when the baby carriage goes rolling out into the road. Because the way they cut
in the road, yeah, that was cool.
The way they cut that, you couldn't tell that she had actually taken the baby out of the carriage.
Yeah, that was a good moment. And you know what was another good moment, Eric? When the pictures,
oh yeah,
are falling on the stairs. You know when she sees the two kids.
Yep.
And the little kid's like, don't talk to strangers, which I have to say, that's awesome because, yeah, in the late 60s, early 70s.
Stranger danger. Stranger danger.
It's right.
Well, it's gotten much worse since then. But see, I had a problem with that, not because the scenes themselves were an issue, but because they have nothing really else to do with the rest of the movie.
No, there's a few scares attempts.
Right, and that's it. You never see the kids again. They say, well, I better talk to the mom. You never see her meet the mom and, you know, have the mom say, fuck off and don't talk to my children ever again.
That's true.
Or whatever it is.
That's true.
And so they even throw it back to you at the end of the movie with the noises upstairs, making you wonder, were there ever really children?
Right.
Because they're looking around up there because there's all this stuff going on and there's all the noises. And yeah, she's memorized the noises and the arguments at this point, and all of a sudden she hears the noise at the end of the movie, and you're left wondering, were there ever really any kids?
And they don't really do anything with that, really.
No.
No, I gotta say, though, I think I may have irritated the people around me in the theater when the scene with the pictures.
Did you make goat noises?
No, but when that series of pictures starts fluttering down the stairs, the second she picked up the first one that had a truck in it, I just laughed out loud. I laughed out loud because I knew exactly where it was going.
Well, we had seen this with The Omen, right? With the pictures of David Warner
with the
thing going through, you know, coming down and cutting his head off.
Oh, another movie they stole from.
But, you know, I mean, look, it works. And sometimes, you know, a good artist, as Quentin Tarantino will tell you, knows to steal from the best. Mm-hmm. And there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, for God's sakes, how many pictures of Jesus do we need in our art museums? You know, no one says, oh, well, Michelangelo did Jesus. I'm not going to do that one.
Right?
Right. You know, it's sometimes
I'm,
so it's,
sticking I don't, with, I'm sticking with Peter at this point.
So I don't have an issue with that. And that's, I mean, it had effective moments. And, you know, for what you were looking at, this is October. We have had pitifully few horror films in theaters of late. And, you know, Eric and I were just sort of discussing in a roundabout way on Facebook earlier. You know, and so just getting something that can give you an effective scare. And, like, you know, for me, there were two scenes in this film that did get to me, besides the bashing the baby in the head on the crib and the Manson scene earlier. And I don't know why they worked for me, but they did. One was the girl running in the hallway.
Oh my god, yeah, that was scary.
With the door, because I'm guessing that was a digital trick, but it didn't feel like a digital trick to me.
Right.
And the other was,
unfortunately, that was in the trailer though.
Yeah.
I avoided the trailers like the plague.
I don't play it. Continue. What was the second one?
And the second one for me was when Annabelle stands up.
Yeah, that was awesome.
Because that's the sort of thing, because we've been seeing this doll now for a movie and 10% of a movie, right?
Yeah.
And we'd never seen the doll ever actually do something. Right. And that's the moment where it becomes real, where, like, it's not an illusion, it's not, is this in my mind, it's like, the doll's fucking standing up, and standing up in a way that's unnatural. They didn't try to make it look like she was like, oh, let me get up off my ass now and stand up. You know, they just kind of slowly, like, elevate, raise, but a little at a time, got up. And I thought, and that really got chills down my spine. And I can't remember the last time a film really got me, like, that kind of chill. Like, oh my god, that's just fucking creepy. You know,
I saw the doll start to stand up, and I closed my eyes. I couldn't watch it.
The reveal of how not only does it stand up, but then it floats up, and it's like, holy shit, what the hell? And then
they just said they don't want to reveal that. But
which was basically the devil or the demon was actually holding the doll, right? I mean,
right.
That was pretty cool too.
I will eat your soul.
Well, I actually enjoyed that aspect of it only because it kind of showed that it wasn't the doll; was the attachment to the doll of the demon. And that, like I said earlier, that was the scene where they showed you the attachment. But I could have gone without seeing his face. I think I would have been better with just a dark shadow behind him or something like that.
It's because it was by the same people that did Insidious and the demon, and that worked so well. They said, let's use the demon again in this one.
My opinion, the best scene for me, the best effect they did or anything like that, was the subtlest one they did when they had the reflection pass in the glass of the picture and then the needle went on the actual record player.
Oh, that's good.
You don't see anything except the reflection in the glass and the needle drops on the record player. And obviously it's showing somebody was standing there, but you don't see them.
I like the elevator scene where every time it looks like the elevator is going up and then it just opens up and it's the basement.
That was pretty well done. Yeah.
Philip, I had that one in my notes just because there was a couple of interesting things about that. I had actually seen that type of thing done before only once, and it was not in a movie. It was in a documentary on the ghosts of Gettysburg, and supposedly it was a true story. This girl was at Gettysburg College, and she went down into the basement in the elevator where the computer lab was, and when the doors opened, she wasn't in the computer lab. She was in a Gettysburg field hospital, and one of the doctors was about to do an amputation, and he was waving her over to come and help, and she freaked out. And she tried to close the elevator door and go back upstairs. And every three times, the elevator doors opened on this same scene.
That's fucked.
And then, isn't that fucked up? And then the last time, she actually got out of the elevator and ran for the stairs. Just like this woman did. So I saw this scene and I loved it. Of course, the other thing I want to point out is, do we ever actually see her hit the button to go upstairs?
Yes.
Or do we just see her hit the button to close the door?
No. After like the second time, she starts slamming on button 4.
Oh, okay.
7 or whatever.
In fact, she slams on the number 6 3 times.
Really?
Yeah, it's like bam, bam, bam.
Oh my god.
That's awesome. Now, let me ask everybody this. Can we all agree, or I'm in the minority here, is that even if the movie was quote unquote a weaker film than say some horror films like Eric, you said you've seen a hell of a lot worse films than this, and this film was okay, and Mike, you said a light thumbs up, and I did too. Would we all agree that it did have a lot of good spooky moments as individual skits?
As a whole, it falls short, but there are some moments for sure.
Yeah, I can agree on that too.
It would have made a nice Stephen King short story, but as a novel, there was a spider at the end.
Oh, look at it. Oh. God damn it.
Yeah, it's not a good 1,000-page book, but you know, 10 pages is all right.
No. I just wanted to say we kind of went off on a tangent when we were talking about Evelyn, but I actually thought that they set up Evelyn's character pretty well and her whole backstory with the death of her daughter and having wanted to commit suicide really set up what happened at the end of the movie quite well, where it was at least partially believable as to why she might be willing to do that.
Eric, since you just brought that up, why don't you tell the story of what happened to her and her daughter or child. I don't know if it was a daughter or a boy, but
it was an adult daughter.
Okay.
And they were in the car. The mother was driving and fell asleep at the wheel, and they crashed, and the daughter died. And because she was so grief stricken, she tried to take her own life and slit her wrists. But she said the ghost of her daughter showed up and said, "It's not your time yet. God has a different plan for you." And so she went and got help and didn't die. And then at the end of the movie, when the demon's trying to get Mia to sacrifice her own soul to save her baby, who's not actually in jeopardy, Evelyn steps up and sacrifices herself and says, "This is what my daughter meant. This is God's plan for me. And now I'm going to see my daughter again," and jumps out the window with the doll.
Which is just evidence that God is a bit of a prick, because his plan was for her soul to be taken by a demon.
Well, that was my feeling towards that, too, because she's like, this was God's plan for me, but she's supposedly giving her soul to a demon, so she'll never see her daughter.
Yeah.
We're gonna give you, and we're giving up the black woman's soul to save the white lady.
Oh, my God.
That's terrible.
God's a dick that way.
But, you know, especially since we're looking at this through the eyes of Mia with the whole Catholicism aspect, you commit suicide, that's it.
Yeah, and you...
True,
yeah,
that's the hell, true.
Or whatever.
And they try and fix that at the end. It's like the end of Jaws 3D when the guy pops up out of the water and, oh, look, the shark didn't eat me because the crowd didn't like it. And at the end, they throw the little bit at the end in the church where he's like, sacrifices, you know, God's work. But it's suicide, and the Catholic Church doesn't condone it. And if we're looking at it through Mia's eyes, she just sent her friend to hell.
Well, right. And I thought, Eric, that, again, the setup was well done for that, and it was very smartly done. But, again, I thought it was a little too heavy-handed.
This movie was clearly not working on being subtle.
Yeah, it was not. That's true. It was just too much for me. But
what I think they should have done for that was they should have had Evelyn character come over for dinner or a scene where they were all out hanging out somewhere at a bar or a restaurant or something, because even though she became friendly with the wife, the husband barely knew her. Maybe I think it was one time outside the building.
He's a doctor.
Well, that's true. That's true. But my point is that I wasn't sure. I'm thinking maybe she's actually the Ruth Gordon of the film.
Oh, okay.
You see what I'm saying? Yeah. And when she's there at the end, right after she got booted out of the door and the door slammed behind her, then I said, okay, she's not the Ruth Gordon of the film. That's a reference from The Rosemary's Baby. And the husband, though, he doesn't know that. And so he's there and she at the end, and this woman he met maybe once in passing was there. The first thing I would think is that she's doing something to my wife rather than evilness and supernatural, because are we to believe at this point that the husband was all on board about the doll being linked to a demon, or?
I think he was, actually.
At that point he was, because the priest was the one who sent him home,
okay.
And he was running home because the priest told him, it's the doll,
right.
It's the doll.
Yeah, 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 right. Yeah. that's true. Okay, okay, all right. So, but you're right, though. I mean, they did set it up really good, and the woman, Evelyn, did fall asleep at the wheel, and her daughter died in the accident. And she also explains, doesn't she also explain that she knew she shouldn't have been driving, even though she did? Meaning there was even more guilt upon it, too. Yeah, okay. Good point. Yeah, and that's how everything works out at the end, and this family is at least free from the doll, and now the doll will go on to, you know, the nurses and stuff. But so in theory, there's a quote unquote happy ending in this film.
The one thing with that too, but the woman tells Mia earlier on that the demon won't leave till it gets a soul, and we're kind of like placated by being told that, you know, this was an act of sacrifice, and so God appreciates sacrifice. But if this woman sacrificed her soul and didn't go to hell, then the demon's still going to stick around because he hasn't gotten his soul yet.
Yeah, right.
Well, and that's why it's still with the doll.
Yeah,
right.
That's true.
But why didn't the doll come back then? Either the woman's soul went to hell, and so the doll can move on now. The demon can move on to somebody else, or the demon hasn't completed what it came for.
No, but the movie never stated that the demon / doll had to have a member of the Gordon family.
Right.
It just said that it needed a soul. So
it didn't explain it very well.
So
though.
It didn't have to come back to Mir and her family to get a soul.
Right. I agree with that. Well, what I'm saying then is that if we're saying that the demon did move on to somebody else, then Evelyn's soul went to hell.
Right. Because
that's the only way the demon would move on.
But it didn't move on, is what Eric's saying. Eric's saying that since it didn't get Evelyn's soul, because Evelyn's soul was, in God's eyes, a sacrifice, the demon now is in the thrift shop, bought by...
Because if the demon moved on, it's not with the doll anymore.
That sounds like a Ray Bradbury story.
So what happens is the doll is now at the thrift shop, still possessed or attached. The woman comes in, buys the doll, and then as we see in The Conjuring, she gives it to her daughter, the nurse. And then those people are now the ones that have to worry about their souls, because the demon is now going to try to get one of their souls.
Why is it the evil dolls never screw around with the shopkeepers? They always sit around and wait to be bought. You know,
I think Eric's point is that the demon didn't get the soul of Evelyn, so it's still attached to the doll. It's just now in Connecticut or wherever the doll lands up, and not in L.A.
It's in a thrift shop in Castle Rock called Needful Things, and it's
well, here, I mean, let's again, this is dealing with the supernatural, and as you know, you were alluding to earlier, we don't necessarily know how it works. We all get the idea, oh, demon wants a soul. Why does the demon want a soul? Does it want two souls?
That's what demons do.
Is it there to get 94? So how many souls does a demon want? And once it's got them, what's it doing with
them? As many as it can get. Demons and souls are like cats and milk. They'll just take what you give them.
Is it building a soul fort in hell? What's it doing with them? So, you know, just...
Hey, crazy demons do crazy things.
You don't want to analyze, because this is not science. This is not going to get a rational answer out of it, and I wouldn't worry too much about it, because certainly every belief system, including the more recent New Agey belief systems, have their own idea of what supernatural entities and demons and angels and spirits and whatever you want to call them. What was the thing from Sinister? The
pagan god.
Yeah,
oh,
you know,
yeah, that thing. The thing looks like the Slipknot member.
The Bagul.
Bagul, yeah, and the Baguls, yeah. You all have an idea what they do and how they work, and they're not necessarily consistent with each other. So, you know, just it's a creepy thing that wants your soul. That's it. And it's out there sitting in a shop wearing a cute little dress and a creepy little face. Ready to come after you. And that's
sounds
all that
timid,
sounds like my last girlfriend.
All right, so any other items that we want to bring up about the film itself? Anything?
I would just like to say that in The Conjuring, I want to go back to something Mike said earlier on. In The Conjuring, the doll was so ugly, and I was all like, who is going to buy a doll like that? Kind of like what Mike said this time. And I have to say that I need to give this movie kudos, because they do explain, in a way, even if the doll as new-looking is still creepy. They explain why it's coveted.
Yeah, it's a set.
Yeah, well, it's part of a set, yep. And there's a reference that the wife has been looking for that for some time to complete that set.
Right.
And at the end, a similar sentiment is expressed by the woman who buys the doll for her daughter. And so through
it's
those references...
It's a collector's item.
Right. I understand now that it's a rare collectible, even if it is hideous. And then throughout the movie, like Mike said, we see it getting dirty from the soot from the fire, if it was back in the house, getting dirty from the trash can, getting all crazy eyed, whatever. So I do have to say that at the very least, I enjoyed that in the movie because for most of The Conjuring, I sat there and looked at their choice for Annabelle being so ugly. And I sat there and went, you were stupid. You were better off going with a Raggedy Ann doll because this is just over the top.
Well, let me ask you that. Okay. Could they have made it work with a Raggedy Ann doll, ignoring the issues of copyright and other stuff? Would they have been able to get away with it? Because she is creepy looking, so I grant them that, and it does work for an evil doll. But could they have gotten away with that with like a Raggedy Ann doll, or is that just too familiar to people for them to take seriously?
I think your second part of what you said is right on. I think it's too familiar to people to work. Maybe don't use Raggedy Ann, but just use something that's simpler and at least a little bit more attractive. Because
honestly, when you look at the real doll, it's like, ooh, that could be in my daughter's bedroom. and maybe that hits a little too close to home, and they probably made the doll ultra creepy because that actually works better for most people, even though it's not accurate.
Well, they also, aiming for people's individual fears, purposely designed this doll to have a ventriloquist look to it.
Yes.
Because ventriloquist dummies are so naturally feared.
They are. Do you know what? You seem to know something about this. And yet, you're right. They're creepy as hell. Why is that?
People in general have a natural fear of inanimate objects having human abilities.
Mm-hmm.
And so because of our the spiritual dogma, as I made the comment earlier off the show, has been passed down over the time to have us be afraid of demons and monsters and things like this. And so when we give human attributes to an inanimate object, we naturally have that fear that when it's not being controlled by a person, it will still have them. And so I think in that aspect, in this film, they did a great job of never having the doll actually do anything. The doll was rock, as we said earlier.
I just when you said that, I was like, damn it, he's right. Everybody thinks dummies are creepy.
Well, I think at some point someone's going to stumble on the idea that if they made a movie with a ventriloquist clown child doll, they will have struck on the ultimate horror icon.
Well, actually, Nathan, do you remember that creepy house that I house sat for that you had to come over and stay with me because I was too terrified to stay in it because there was something awful there? This psycho woman had that room that she put me in that she wanted me to sleep in full of dolls, just like Mia. She was a psychopath. But she also had this bird, and it talked, this parrot. So I would go over there, and I'd stay there at night, and the house was built in, what, 1740 or something? I mean, it's ridiculously old. And she had this bird. And this freaking creepy bird, I'd be sitting there doing my homework. This was 9 years ago, 2005, sitting there doing my homework for college. And it'd be the middle of the day, and it'd be really quiet. And all of a sudden, the bird would say something like, "He's going up the stairs." He's going up the stairs. And I would be like, I'd call Nathan. I'd be like, dude, there is something in this fucking house. Like, you know,
and it's going up the stairs. The bird
and it's
just
going up
told
the stairs.
Me.
The first thing I did when I showed up the house was I walked around and went, okay, don't take me too new agey with this, but the feng shui on this house is all off in that the sharp angles of it cut off any view from any other hallway or room, so you're always left with the visual aspect of a shadow out of the corner of your eye, making you feel like somebody's, standing in the hallway. And, you know, our natural instincts as animals are to avoid those things standing in the shadows, just like we used to, like, run and hop in the trees to get away from lions and tigers. You know, we avoid those things in the shadows. And so when we see them in a house that's put together that way, we have a natural unease.
Plus, when you have hundreds of ugly dolls, a parrot that scares the hell out of you. Plus,
and a bird that's telling you that something's going up the stairs.
That's right. Yes. And the whole house is filled with asbestos and lead paint.
Yeah.
Coming for you, Christy. Coming for you, Christy.
Yeah.
But, you know,
in the bird's defense, he could have been trained to say that when he saw the cat go upstairs or something, but
at least it didn't stop and go, and may God have mercy on your soul.
Aren't clowns and dolls and ventriloquist dummies basically the living, or not living, but real world examples of the uncanny valley with CGI? You know, that we're really good at recognizing people, and even better at recognizing when people are just off. Right, and so and that aren't really what dolls are, and ventriloquist dummies are worse because they're talking dolls. You know, they're just look like people, but they're wrong.
Well, and I'll tell you what, though.
What you're saying
about the bird, animals sense stuff that we can't.
Exactly.
And every once in a while, it's cause for concern. Like a couple of weeks ago, I was just sitting here at my computer, and my younger cat here, backed into the room from the hallway with her tail all puffed up.
Oh my gosh.
And I was just like, okay. The cat thinks there's something in the living room that's really scary. I really kind of don't want to go look, but I feel I should. Okay, let's go.
Chrissy, do you think the psychopath woman purposely had the bird say that because she knew it would terrorize you?
That's a good question. I don't know. I mean, they loved this house, and when she took me for a tour, she was very proud to take me down to the basement, which was dirt, and point out that she knew for a fact, because of the written history she had of the home, that a kitchen slave, had hanged himself.
Oh, see, awesome.
I was really excited, but I was like, oh, my God. Point.
I have a rule about not going down to see people's dirt basements. It's especially when they say, "Come check out my dirt basement," where the slave hanged himself. I usually wait upstairs.
The dirt is nice and moist. I know, because I just dug a fresh grave.
Now that was really freaky. But you know, we're talking about fears here and what bothers people. We've been watching this season of Face Off. Do you guys ever watch Face Off on Sci-Fi?
I did.
Yeah, have you? Well, they do. If you don't know what it is, they do. It's like horror. It's like makeup competitions.
Yeah,
like
prosthetic makeup competition. It's a, like elimination kind of tournament.
Yeah, and this year they've done a lot with horror makeups, and they've had Robert Englund as a guest. They've had the guy who played Herschel from The Walking Dead as a guest. But some of the cool makeups they did this year, they had to do their own take on Bloody Mary. Did you see any of these, Abe?
I might miss the Bloody Mary one. I remember some of the like the Jim Henson one.
Okay. Do you have this one? They also did a horror movie poster, and they had to create the villain in the movie.
Yes, that was one of my favorites.
That was awesome. And then there was one where they had to create clown characters inspired by their childhood fears.
That's a good one too.
Yeah, and then the one girl did the creepy clown doll.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what I was coming back to. But anyway, it was just interesting. If you guys can get this season of Face Off on demand and look for some of the horror makeups would be right up your alley just to see them.
And it was like a child-sized clown doll. So
yeah, it was.
And it won. So you were right.
Yeah.
Now, child-sized clown doll ventriloquist. I mean, that's it. That's the last ingredient they need.
Yeah.
All right. So let's wrap up here. Let's give our final opinions of the film. You know, and you know if it's worth seeing and all that. So Mike, why don't you start?
Again, it's October, late October. I'm sure by the time people hear this, many of us are out there looking for Halloween-y things, looking to be scared. You're going to go, you know, maybe to a haunted house attraction. you don't really care what the story at the haunted house attraction is. It's window dressing. You want to be scared. And I think this works on that level. It is not a classic. I don't even know if it's a movie I'm ever going to own on disc, even if it at a discount price. But I'm glad I saw it. And I won't rank, you know, a rant about how it's got issues here and there, because it was just a fun film. I enjoyed the performances. It did have, you know, three or four scenes that really did get to me, which is really rare. And again, it's horror in the theaters, guys. Come on, support it.
Yeah, no, that's fair. I'll go second. I pretty much agree with you, Mike. And I can't say it's any better or worse than any of the other major studio released horror films at theaters this year, from Oculus to Deliverance from Evil to...
It's been kind of a weak year, actually.
Glow, From Above, and all these others. I mean, it's no worse than those films. And, yeah, Eric, you're right. It's been weak for theatrical releases.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. VOD and disc has been a lot of damn good stuff. But, yeah, I mean, it's not a bad film in that sense. I enjoyed it. I probably, like Mike, I don't necessarily think I would buy the film. I mean, if I saw it for a couple bucks, I may consider it. But I was not horrified in the, oh no, I wasted my money way that I was expecting when I walked into the film and watched it. I mean, I enjoyed myself better than I enjoyed myself than Tusk and pretty much any other theoretical horror film this year. So would I
Innkeepers is so happy to know it's off your shit list and but yeah, now, well, Tusk is your go-to bad film.
And I will agree with you on it.
I don't know about that. Innkeepers is pretty worse than Tusk, I think. But I would say if you're looking for a Halloween-y thing to do, as Mike said, I would check the film out. If you like The Conjuring, you may want to just see this because, you know, it has that doll, and that was the coolest part of that film, arguably, at least some people think so. So, yeah, I mean, you know, see it or not, you know, no big deal. If you just want an hour and a half of fun, it's a pretty decent film. What about you, Eric?
My reaction to this film was pretty neutral. I appreciated the lead actress. I thought it had a couple of really good moments, although those were evened out by some weaker moments. Overall, you know, I saw it at a matinee price, so I wasn't too upset about it. You know, it's worth that, or renting. I'm not going to encourage anybody to rush out and see it. And I didn't think it was nearly as strong as The Conjuring was, which inspired its creation.
All right, very good. And, Abe, what about yourself?
It was sort of a very meh kind of film, but I didn't hate it. If you guys are looking for a horror movie this October, you know, you can give it a shot, but if you feel uncertain about it, you can just wait for it to come on demand or DVD release. It's not going to be as strong as the other ghost films we've talked about in here, like Insidious or The Conjuring itself. But it does have some moments, but it's definitely not something I recommend going to the theater to see, personally. But it's up to you in the end.
Yep, very good. All right, so Nate and Chrissy, why don't you guys wrap up what you think of the film?
Well, I can pretty much agree with what everybody said. The film has some very nice moments that are really well done. I honestly feel that one scene, Eric, where she's, you know, smashing the kid and we find out it's the baby, is worth seeing just by itself. I had a good time. I enjoyed it. My biggest thing was I'm just all about story, and there were so many little holes and things that were really a little bit confusing to me. So I would say if you're not a story fiend, if you're not, if you don't care that there's some things that quite don't make any sense and you just want to go have a little fun and be a little creeped out, then yeah, go see it, obviously. And it's the only thing, like Mike said, it's the only horror movie that's out right now that's going. So go support horror in the theaters so that we get more.
Well, Dracula opens this week.
Wait, and there's Dracula a movie I wanted to ask you guys about. It's called Exists.
Oh, I want to see that.
Yeah, I really want to see that. I don't know. It's called Exists, and it's a found footage Bigfoot
thing. It's Eduardo Sanchez.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, that's cool. That's the guy from Blair Witch and Lovely Molly.
Yeah, it's supposed to be really awesome. October 24th it opens.
VOD and limited theaters is what they post on their Facebook page.
Okay.
But we can see it on Amazon if it's VOD, right? Or yeah, Netflix.
That means different things, so we'll see.
Right, because limited release could mean five theaters, it could be one theater, it could be 200 theaters, it could be 500 theaters. So, and that's what drives me nuts, is they're not saying how many theaters.
The thing is that the worst case scenario for limited release is films like Cold in July and The Guest, which were two big films that were coming out this year, the Jim Mickelson. Mickle's film was Cold in July, and Simon Barrett, Adam Wingard's film is The Guest, and yet limited release means not even VOD. It means actually like seven theaters for the next 7 months before you actually get to see it. But it also could mean like Honeymoon, which was Ygritte's film from Game of Thrones, which was limited release, but it was immediately on, you know, video on demand. I mean, we don't know exists. So that's going to be interesting. Hopefully it is straight to VOD, though. Limited release means...
Limited release, really all it means is not all the teasers.
So, Nathan, you...
I was just saying that with the end of the movie itself, the Annabelle... Now I've got all these other movie names in my head I want to say. I'd say it was predictable, and when I go to a horror film, I want to be sucked into it enough that I'd be afraid that that might happen to me. And except for the one moment with the image in the window, kind of freaking me out, and the scene with the baby, the doll being smashed, you didn't really feel for the people on screen. You didn't care what happened to them. So I'm going to go the opposite and say, don't go and see it to support the theaters. If you want an hour and a half of a little entertainment, and are you willing to drop $25 on it, go ahead. But I'd say
$25. Where the hell do you see movies?
It's $12 a ticket up here.
Yeah.
Damn.
Geez. Oh my
god.
So
if two people want to go to the movie, it's $12 or $12.50.
Yeah.
So it's $25 for the two of us to go see a film.
Yeah. Even during the afternoon.
No, during the mornings and afternoon,
The 10 o'clock movies are six and change.
But they don't have them in the mornings anymore, and then it's like $10 in the afternoon. But I'd say rather than go to it to support horror movies in the film, don't go to it and make them and expect better from them. Because right now they're just saying, well, it's the only thing out there. You have no choice. So I say wait for something better to come. It's my opinion.
All right, fair enough. Before we close out, Chrissy and Nate, why don't you give people information again about yourselves, where they can get your works or your podcasts and all that stuff, the websites and all that other good stuff.
Sure. Well, you can basically find me at www.ChristyPetersonSchoonover.com. And there you can find links to whatever short stories I have that are published online in various literary magazines that you can read. There's, you know, there's a store page which has links to Amazon to all the anthologies that my stuff is in that's available. There's a treasure trove of all kinds of podcast episodes and things you can listen to. There's videos you can watch. So that's where you can find me. That's where I hang out. And come visit me.
And you can find me at www.ghostanddemon.com. That's GHOSTANDDEMON.com. And if you Google Ghostman and Demon Hunter, or just look for Ghostman and Demon Hunter on Facebook, you'll find us. And if you want to send me hate mail because I don't trust psychics, send it to Nathan@ghostanddemon.com.
Very good. Very good. And I have to say, speaking of dolls, Abe's mother, who I know through my writer's group, she wrote one of the best scary doll stories I ever heard. She read it like 3 years ago, and I don't know if she's ever published it, and I forget the name of it, but it was damn good. Really good story.
Oh, she needs to send it out, because I'm sure there's tons of magazines and anthologies looking for good stuff.
Get on her about that.
Yeah, yeah. So,
you know, she also did a pretty good zombie chihuahua story as well.
Those are the first time
I've ever heard those words together.
I was going to say, those are always good. I've never seen one of those miss.
Zombie chihuahua.
There is just one more thing I just want to add really quick, only because Kevin Letts had brought it up. And we were talking about it earlier, the owls all over the place. They do actually mean something. Owls are a symbol for seeing what's kept hidden. And it can sometimes be the real reason for someone's actions, that you can see through that. It also can symbolize transformation or change. But the owl in some cultures is also associated with departed souls.
Did you ever see The Fourth Kind?
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say. Okay. Totally. I actually loved The Fourth Kind, but I'm a sucker for all kinds of found footage, even if it's crap. So. Yeah. So, but anyway, I just wanted to throw that out there because Kevin Letts and I were talking about it online, and I thought I would actually answer that question.
Yeah, that's more scary than the typical pineapple that people hang up on their doors.
Obviously, you've never had someone throw one of those at you. Not the pineapple, the picture. It hurts like hell.
Oh, okay. I thought you meant the pineapple. That would hurt too.
The pineapple is still pretty funny.
As long as you're wearing a glove, you're safe with those.
Yes. Oh, my God. All right, so, sure, all of us are here. We want to thank Christy and Nate.
Yes, thank you so much for stopping by.
Yay! Well,
thank you for having us. It's so much fun. We definitely
got to have you guys on again. Next interesting film that has something to do with ghost hunting, all that other good stuff, we'll make sure we get Nate on, and Christy, you can probably join us sometime in the near future as well.
That'd be fun. I always like it.
Yeah, I think you guys always have good stuff to add and good stories to tell.
Well, thank you.
Yes, you do. Yeah, so, all right. So
you're a much better guest than that MJ Preston prick.
Tell that guy.
All right. No more picking on that lousy Canadian.
You didn't say he was Canadian. Oh, man.
the worse than sharks.
Nothing worse than sharks.
All right.
What about ventriloquist shark clown dummies?
From Canada.
Well, then NATO's. Things on South Park.
Are they child size?
With their hands coming off.
If they're child size, then we're doomed.
All right. That's enough. I shouldn't be insulting the Canadians. At least, well, they're really Quebecers.
Oh, there we go. How about that? You clown NATO. How about that one?
NATO. They're going to close out the show with Blame Canada in the background.
Yeah, there we go.
No.
We'll and the bitch and Murray too. Blame Canada. Yes.
All right. So with that, what's Eric?
Yeah. Let's get the hell out of here. All right. Thanks for tuning in, everybody, to listen to us talk about Annabelle tonight. We hope you enjoyed the conversation. Come back next week. We'll be talking about something else. Cherish is a word I use to describe all the feeling that I have hiding here for you inside. You don't know how many times I wish that I had told you. You don't know how many times I wish that I could hold you. You don't know how many times I wish that I could mold you into someone who could cherish me as much as I cherish you. Perish is a word that more than a blind. Open my heart each time I realize that I am not gonna be the one to share your dreams. That I am not gonna be the one to share your schemes. That I am not gonna be the one to share what seems to be the life that you could cherish as much as I do yours. Never found the words that
that could make you want me, that have the right amount of letters, just the right sound that could make you hear, make you see that you are driving me out of my mind. Oh, I could say I need you, but then you'd realize that I want you, just like a thousand other guys would say they love you, with all the rest of their lives, when all they wanted was to touch your face, your hands, and gaze into your eyes. Cherish is the word I use to describe all the feeling that I have writing here for you inside. Someone who could cherish me as much as I cherish you. And I do cherish you. And I do cherish you. Cherish is the word.